Coming up on This Week in Google, it's me, Jason Howell, filling in for Leo Laporte, also Jeff Jarvis, Stacey Higginbotham, and Ant Pruitt. And we have a lot to talk about, a lot of it Google-related and Pixel-related. We've got a Pixel hardware event coming up next month. We've got a satellite phone connectivity coming to Android 14 anyway, so you're going to have to wait a little bit for that. We've got an edit feature coming to Twitter and some details as far as how that works. The EU actually wants to regulate phone updates. How do you feel about that? And we take a trip into my air-conditioned garage. Come check it out. This Week in Google is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 680, recorded Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. Failure as a feature. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Hover. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. And by 8sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer, and the pod is the ultimate sleep machine. Go to 8sleep.com/twig for exclusive Labor Day savings through September 11th. If you're listening after September 11th, use the same URL, that's 8sleep.com/twig, to check out the pod and save $150 at checkout. And by Nomad. Go to nomadgoods.com/twig and use promo code TWIG for 10% off your first purchase of any Nomad accessory. They have Apple Watch straps, wireless chargers, ultra-durable cables, and more. Limited time offer. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I am filling in for Leo. My name is Jason Howell. Leo is... he's in the area, but he's on his way to a hair metal concert. Just... let that sink in a little bit. I think it's awesome that that's actually a true statement. Yes, Def Leppard, Poison, Joan Jett, and I'm missing one. What's that? Wait a minute. Motorhead? Is that right? I was like, wait a minute, Metallica? I had no idea.
No, it's Motley not Metallica. Crue.
There we go.
Motley
Crue. It was an M hair band of some sort. So
girls.
Yes. Motley Crue with the umlauts. That is Stacey Higginbotham joining us today. It's good to see you, Stacey. Welcome back.
Hello, y'all.
Hello. Any of those bands your favorites back in the day or even currently?
Last week I said that I did see Def Leppard when I was pregnant and I fell asleep.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
We were like the second row. I'm like...
understandably so, though. I think anyone would understand that. Still, you've seen Def Leppard and I never have, even if you've only seen a couple of songs. So I'm slightly jealous.
They did a good show until I fell asleep. It was fine.
It continued to be good. It kept you asleep. Also joining us, Jeff Jarvis. Jeff, any of those bands kind of wake you up?
Does Joni Mitchell play in any of them?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay.
Joan Jett, though, is about as close as you get to Joni Mitchell.
So, Stacey, did you snore?
I mean, probably. I was pregnant. Pregnant women do all kinds of disgusting things. And I snore today, so probably yes. Yeah.
Probably so. And the snoring was no louder than anything else happening in that concert.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Also joining us, Ant Pruitt. What's up, Ant?
Not much, sir.
If you had to pick one of those bands to see live tonight, which one would it be? Or would it be none of the above?
I was going to say, can I punt
or
pick a different coin? I no idea, sir. I think I'll pass. I'll just sit outside and people watch. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I have a feeling that is a really great people watching show.
Yeah, I'd sit outside with the camera and get some pretty interesting photos, I'm sure.
No kidding. Now, you'd probably get some interesting photos with the camera inside the show as well.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Because aren't they?
Yeah, let me get in the pit.
Yeah, right. You don't take your gear there. I think
I don't think there's a pit.
Yeah, there probably isn't. You're probably right. Not at this show. It's probably
not at this day and age.
Yeah. I mean, there are still pits, but I don't know that there will be a pit at this show.
Well, technically, there's usually still a photo pit.
Oh, okay. That's different than a mosh pit. You're right.
Right.
I was thinking of a mosh pit.
So was I.
Oh, no. So was I want no part of that. I'd hurt somebody.
That is very responsible of you, Ant.
That's responsible mosh etiquette. Yeah. Actually, some people would want you to hurt them. That's just the way the mosh pit works. I do think that they're sitting in the front row, or they're very close to the stage. Is that right? I think
that
I remember Lisa
right.
saying that. So could be interesting, some of the stories that we hear from that show. And I'm sure Leo will talk about it next week on This Week in Google. But this week, I don't know if you heard, but there's some big hardware announcement news today. Did you hear?
Apple? Is that what you're talking about? Apple?
Who's Whoa. Apple? I'm not talking about Apple. What are you talking about? I'm talking about Google. Why would you think I'm talking about
Apple? We don't care about gigantic kitty watches. We don't.
Yeah, that watch does look like a beast. What is it? The Apple Watch. What do they call it? It's not the Apple Watch Pro.
Humongous?
Series eight? Something other.
Yeah, the Ultra, that's what it is.
They're
taking a page out of Samsung's book and throwing an Ultra on the end of it. Samsung always has
we
their
can't,
Ultra devices.
No, everyone has to pick their own naming. So then we can figure out, like, Apple, when we're guessing, like, is it the Apple Watch 8? If they add like an Ultra to it, then I'm going to be like a Galaxy Ultra 7BQ.
Right. Or why not the Apple Watch Mega? Like the Mega Watch.
Mondo.
The Mondo. Yeah, none of them have done Mondo yet. That's a good one right there. Of
Mondo.
Course. I like that. For a ginormous, nice. Like, chunky watch on your wrist, I think Mondo is quite appropriate.
I think you should just go with Apple Watch Chonk.
Chonk edition. Sign me up. I'd get it even though it doesn't work with my Android.
You know, it's the kind of thing, if Google did that, I mean, they have no taste, they have no class, they have no style. It's Google. Apple does it, and it's rediscovering huge.
It's fresh. Yes. It's like,
you could do
that's
absolute
refreshing.
Unit. So Apple Watch, absolute unit. There you go. That'd be for the little...
That sounds like an Elon Musk child's name.
No, it's how Gen Z talks.
Yes. That is good. Love it. Of course, we aren't going to talk in detail and depth about Apple's hardware announcement. That wasn't even the hardware announcement that I was talking about.
Of course not.
The one I was referring to is the fact that Google, on the day before Apple's hardware announcement, announced its own hardware event. Yes, we have to wait until October 6th for that to happen. But still, we knew it existed before Apple's event actually happened. So, I don't know, they score like 2.5 points somehow.
Hell, it's the day after the show. Oh.
Yeah.
Thursday.
So this is Thursday, October 6th, the day after the show. So that means the event will happen, and then you all will have 6 days to prepare your arguments for or against.
And you five.
Any of the hardware that is shown off at the event. And actually, Google is being pretty forthcoming. I mean, we kind of already knew what we're going to see at this hardware event. The Pixel 7, the Pixel 7 Pro, the Pixel Watch. All three of those devices we've seen already because Google did the thing where at Google I.O.
They need
in May,
a surprise. They need a surprise like, oh, I don't know, a new Pixelbook. What do you think?
Who wants a Pixelbook, Mr. Jarvis? Come on. Who wants one?
That would be a surprise. But you know what, Jeff? I think you're onto something. They do need a surprise because I was watching part of the Apple event today. And what did they call that bar and the Pro that expands, that had a catchy name for it, and I think John might know.
The Dynamic
Something
Island.
The
Something
Dynamic Island.
Island.
So basically what Apple did is, you know, in the top where there is like a cutout for the cameras, Apple essentially said, all right, many people see this as a limitation. It's a cutout. We're going to turn it into a new UI kind of paradigm for receiving notifications and information from apps. And so that little pill expands out and information appears there. It becomes this like living organism within the UI. And that was something that I don't know that we knew of ahead of the event. And what it made me realize is that like we go into these Google events, we know flipping everything about these phones by the time it happens. Apple somehow is able to hold on to some key pieces of information. Some of it gets leaked out, but some of it they hold on to for that true moment of surprise. And that's what really lacks from Google's hardware events. And
I will continue to sing this song that I've sung for the last 3 years here. Google knows what they're doing. These leaks are not leaks, man. They're giving that information out to somebody somewhere and then claiming it's a so-called leak. This is happening way too often. Because if it was really
harder to
go ahead, Miss Stacey.
No, I think it's harder to terrify your partners when you're Google, and so these things do come out because people want to talk about them. I don't know if Google, like, I just don't think Google cares as much about leaks, whereas Apple, man, I feel like you're dragged to a basement somewhere and like,
but then also,
but from a hardware standpoint, Apple has way more, what is it, cachet or whatever versus Google.
It does.
So it seems like it only makes sense for Google to put as much information out as they possibly can to get some type of interest in it, because the average John or Jill on the street are more than likely looking for the next Samsung device versus the next Google device, let alone thinking about Apple devices out there, right?
Do you think the average John, if you're an Android buyer, you're either a super passionate Android buyer or you're buying a phone just because you can't afford or don't want for whatever reason to go Apple?
Yeah,
right. That's my take on that. So I don't know if you even care.
No, it's a religion.
Well, that's you're either in the religion, or you're just it's a phone that you can afford.
You're cheap.
I swear, I see more religious folks leaning towards the Samsung side of things, though, versus the Google side of things.
Yeah, a lot more Android energy from the everyday consumer going towards Samsung than going for Google. I mean, Samsung's also been doing this a lot longer than Google.
Oh, yeah.
But
they
I do
have
see
a retail
more
chain.
Yeah, totally.
They have legitimately better hardware.
There it is. Somebody said it.
Yeah. No.
I mean,
I think you're right. They've spent a lot of time refining how they create their phones, which is not to say that Google puts out bad hardware. It's just Samsung. Yeah, they're just sharper on this stuff. I prefer the design language that Google does with the Pixels more, and I prefer UI and the kind of the Pixel UI approach that Google does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I can also admit that Samsung is at the top of the Android food chain for a reason. You know, I have I have family, I have friends who have Samsung devices, and they don't even think of checking out another phone. It's just because they're so used to the Samsung thing. And they hold on to their phones for a really long time. Samsung devices kind of allow you to do that if you're buying of a certain level, a certain tier of Samsung phones.
How is the level of, since I haven't touched one in ages, how is the level of Samsung software junk atop it?
I mean, that has definitely changed over the years. There's, you know, I guess it depends on what you define as junk. I feel like it used to be that you got a Samsung phone and you got all sorts of other apps, be it from Samsung or not from Samsung, all these like deals made, you know, behind the scenes, cluttering up the phone. It felt like your apps tray was just being impacted by all these decisions that were made for you. And I think that that's lessened. It's still there, but Samsung, I think more so, has really leaned into the extra features and services that they offer. Samsung really wants to be an Apple, you know, and I think they do a decent job of doing of having that. Like,
I think they're getting pretty close, right?
They're doing really well with that. But I think, you know, more and more, I imagine Samsung has a picture of, you know, of Apple or an iPhone hanging on their walls, like inspiration of like someday. Someday we're going to be like you, you know?
I think that's fair because you can see the effort they put into this stuff. And again, I agree with you as far as like the Pixel experience with vanilla Android. But seems like Samsung has started to clean that up a little bit more. The few people that I know that are really passionate about Samsung, and every time I've seen their phones, it's definitely not what it used to be in the days of yore.
For sure.
And fragmented Android. And then the build quality of those phones are you pick them up, they're tanks.
Yeah, it's just the same word that came to my mind. Yeah, Samsung is of a certain tier, of a certain, you know, kind of category. They're built like tanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really well designed and well built. Do you love all the features? Do you even use or need all the features? No. I mean, some Samsung, you know, dedicated people will get in there and use all of them. But, you know, that's also part of Samsung's playbook is like we throw a million different features in here. You don't have to use them all, but you're going to find the handful of ones that really work for you. And that used to feel on older Samsung phones like, oh, my God, stop it. Like, stop trying to make me believe that you are amazing and smart because of all of these things that you've done. And they still kind of push that on you a little bit when you first set up a Samsung phone. But then you get past that. And you kind of settle into your use of it. And then you're kind of settle into finding the things that actually do work for you. And great. You don't have to use it all.
I remember a time when it was like the thing to have all of the cutesy stuff on phones and, you know, all of the different bubbles popping up and all of the weird sound effects every time you tap something. I wondered if that was something that the consumers really were digging for. And I'm sorry that you hear singing going on in the background, but I don't know why that is.
Sandy Cheeks?
Sorry about that. I should probably close my door. I told y'all this every daggum day, all daggum day.
That's awesome. I love it.
They're going to be called the funny girl on Broadway before you know it, Andrew.
Oh, man.
Bring her in. Put her on the mic.
She's got a captive audience right now. Rehearsals begin. That's so amazing.
So sorry about that. I will close my door.
I love it. I love it. This is so cool. So let's see here. So we got the 7. Some news about the 7. Google actually confirmed that the next generation Tensor chip, not surprising, but the next generation Tensor chip is going to be on board. We really don't know what that even means, just that it will be.
Stay there for a second. Would you? I was wondering today with Google v. Apple, and Google's has Tensor and has all this processing going on the phone to do things like translation and such. Does Apple have any equivalents to that kind of A processing?
Yeah, they
power
have their Bionic
services. So compare the services.
Oh boy.
Well,
I don't know that I have the answer to that because I'm relatively clueless on the Apple side of things. Do you know something?
Well, I was going to say it's hard to do an apples to apples. Okay, apples to apples. Yes. You know what I mean? It's hard to benchmark them.
Rimshot.
It's
rim
hard
shot.
To avoid that. It's hard to. Yeah,
yeah, sorry.
Hey, pineapples.
Yeah, oranges to oranges comparison because both of them are now designing their own chips. They're still using, they're both ARM licenses, but that's one of the, I don't know if it's a, it's that tight integration between the hardware and the software. So, you know, Apple is doing onboard device, like machine learning type stuff. So they may not be doing it for real-time translate, or that's not an advertised feature.
Well, that's what I'm asking, Stacey.
So they're doing it for facial recognition.
Okay. Where does Google have a strength in data, in the data sets to enable the machine learning to happen on the phone? Where does Apple, if any, have any weakness there?
It's not a weakness there. So what happens on your phone is actually, there's two sides of machine learning. There's the training of something, training something to recognize words and speech. And then there's the inference, which is running the noises my mouth makes against that particular algorithm. And then eliciting the translation. So the hardest part from a chip perspective is training, and that all happens right now in the cloud. So any advantage that Apple has or Google has, it's kind of obliviated. That is not a word.
Should be.
They don't have it. They don't have that. Because they're both doing things in the cloud. And then they stick that model. So whatever speech-to-text model they have, they're going to run it locally on the phone. So it's just running inference, which is still process-intensive, but it's not like crazy, like GPU-level compute. So my hunch is they've tweaked their algorithms to work specifically with both of their chips. So it doesn't, and everyone has access to like the training data for speech, right? So where you would look for advantages, I'm trying to think, would be, I mean, even image recognition is just whatever training data you're using. Google has lots, but you can also buy access to it. Apple probably has lots they can get. I feel like Google gets it because, and I don't even know how much of this is actually true anymore. You know, Google got a lot of it by like picking it up from its users, whereas
right, that's
Apple
my point,
didn't pull
of.
That. Yeah, right. So that's the actual data that they're going to create they're going to do the training on originally in the cloud.
Right.
But Apple can just throw money at that problem too.
Mm, yeah.
So, in Apple's got the margins to do it. So maybe that's how they're doing it because their quality is not really suffering, I don't think. I mean, I know Siri is not as awesome, but it's definitely gotten better.
Yeah,
it has improved. Someone who's doing like speech to text on an iPhone, are you seeing changes?
Yeah.
My husband does not seem unhappy. And he has an iPhone. He doesn't seem unhappy with his iPhone.
We need the occasional Apple guest here to say, how is it over there?
Right. How you living over there?
Over there.
It's like... That's a good idea. In fact, I've booked Leo for the show for next week. So, solid. I'll get his Apple perspective next week.
Well played, Mr. Producer. Well played.
Thank you. You know, I try to stay on top of things around here. But, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, as far as the AI compute, you know, all that kind of stuff, Google is and has been pretty known. And, you know, has proven itself to be pretty solid as far as that stuff is concerned. It's a good question. Where does Apple stand by comparison? Used to kind of be a standout thing for Google and for Android devices to have that. But has that gap narrowed? I still find myself, you know, for right or wrong, I find myself still locked in the thinking that Google has a leg up there. But maybe that gap has really narrowed a lot. Either that or maybe people don't care as much about it because, I mean, Apple, I think, is doing all right, you know, by comparison.
But they aren't. I mean, you can't do speech to text. I mean, real-time translate on Google devices is pretty awesome.
It is.
Not that most people need it, which is unfortunate, but, like, I don't think Apple, I mean, someone in the comments just be like, Stacey, you and your blinkered Android worldview, but I don't think Apple has anything like that.
Right.
But I don't think that's been a priority.
Well, yeah, is live translation from one language to another? I'm not saying it's not an important feature. It's very important. For the people who really need it, it's game changing. But yeah, really, the majority of people probably don't have opportunities in their daily life to use something like that. So while it's a really great kind of example of Google's prowess in this aspect of what they do, it's, you know, that's neat. I have no use for that unless I go traveling somewhere, maybe. Yeah. You know,
would you rather have privacy or real-time translation for a week during your vacation?
Wait a second, Stacey.
That's
that goes
a tough question.
Window. Apple's going into the ad business. All that they used to talk about, that's going away. Mm. Apple's suddenly going to change its mind about privacy. I bet.
I'd be curious to see.
Say more, Jeff.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like your cynicism is like totally founded. Is that even?
Yeah. Correct? Well, because they're going in the ad. The whole background of Apple and privacy was Apple failed at the ad business, and so they turned a failure into a feature. Ooh, that's not
that's right. Yeah.
Failure into a feature. Oh, I like that. And so we're the privacy company, which really meant we don't know anything about advertising. We failed at it. We don't really care. Use the data in any way. So fine, you're better off with us. And now they are way going into the ad business, which means they are way going to need data. No two ways about it. And so I think that if we compare Apple statements of 2 years ago to 2 years hence, we're going to find a little hypocrisy, I'll bet. Just wager it.
They've leaned so heavily
into... Oh, are you basing this...
Sorry,
go. Oh, sorry. Oh, I was going to say, are you basing this on the reports of them doubling their digital advertising business?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
they've hired major and all of, okay,
ad,
so
right, right, right. They're going into it, and you know it's everybody's in the ad business, right? Amazon is Amazon's ad business is now bigger than the entire magazine industry. Best Buy's floors are advertising. Instacart is advertising. Everybody's in the ad business now, but all is ad. But interestingly.
Yes.
Primarily to others as ancillary revenue. It's Google's primary support, obviously.
Right.
But in the case of Apple, it's a big heaping of gravy on the meatloaf. And same for Amazon. A real big ladle of... And I used to work at Ponderosa Steakhouse, by the way. One thing we were trained to do was you take out the cheap Australian beef right off the grill... And you next you're supposed to ask someone if they want the mushroom sauce, the mushroom gravy, which is just awful. And you ladle it up and have it right there ready to pour on. Would you like some mushroom sauce?
There you go. Always instructed. Hide that bad meat.
Yep, exactly.
So, okay, well, I this is helpful to me because I'm not 100% aware, but Apple's advertising stuff is already in their apps, their news and stock apps have advertising. They have it in the App Store.
Yeah.
And they
I think this news report that you're referring to, well, no, someone linked in chat to an article, Apple growing its own ad businesses, privacy.
There's a few pieces.
Rivals. But that's from 2021. That's from April 2021. So I don't know if there's newer. You know, that
well,
was focused specifically on the App Store.
Yeah, this is from Bloomberg in August. So about a month ago. And then they advertise on Apple TV. So
in August, right?
What
Apple
finds
its next big business showing ads on your iPhone, said Bloomberg.
Yeah, and they're saying paid. You're going to get ads inside your iOS paid service. So it's a switch.
It's a double-edged sword that Apple can wield. On the one hand, they hurt everybody else's ad business, particularly Facebook Meta. And on the other hand, you know, like you can't do any of this data stuff because we're Apple, we're pure. And then on the other hand, Apple has all this first party data. It's going to become a world of first party data. That's all.
Their advertising looks like it's advertising. It's letting developers pay to advertise their stuff on the platform. So it doesn't look like it's looking. It's search term data. So it's like, hey, if I'm looking for a car game. Let's show, you know, I can pay to have, you know, my game higher up. So it feels more like Amazon's ad business than something like Google.
Which is now bigger than the magazine industry.
Right.
So at their scale, there's a lot you can do there. And I think,
yeah,
too,
you totally,
Stacey,
yeah.
When you get to, you know, and this is, I put a thread in, which I hope we can get to later, about, because I've been trying to get my head around the streaming business. And what a mess it seems to us as consumers, like all these bloody things you can subscribe to for one thing you want on. It's like the monster Mondo album you don't want to have. You just want the single. And that's the mess we're in now. And the point of this thread is how we're heading back to an economy like the old studio system, where before there was antitrust action, the movie studio owned the theater and ripped off everybody else trying to get onto it. All right, so consider what else is going to be on your phone than just an app. If we consider the death of broadcast, NBC is, rumor has it, going to give up the 10 o'clock hour. Prime time is meaningless. Cable is cord cutting all over. So if it is finally the day of streaming, and it's not just your phone, but it's also your Apple TV, it's also your Apple, your laptop, it's also your tablet, it's everything else. It could be that the entirety of the entertainment industry is going to have to advertise on Apple to get your attention. Just one example.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, that stopped the conversation cold.
You're just blowing our minds. No, I'm trying.
Jeez.
You know, it's all this Apple talk. It just takes it out of me.
Yeah, I know. It does. It does take it. I know. I agree. Live la vida, Google people.
I guess where I come back with the whole Apple thing is Apple has leaned so heavily and so deeply into this privacy everything thing, mm-hmm, that if they suddenly change course, that's going to be really noticeable by hardcore users of the platform.
But they're gonna love it still. Because they're Apple fanboys.
Somehow,
this is the right way to do it. This is wonderful. Right. Thank you, Apple.
It all depends on how Apple signals that. Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, there are those people. I mean, but not everybody. Some people have just absorbed, oh, Apple cares about my privacy. And if you ask them, they're like, how? And they'll be like, well, you know, it just doesn't take my data like Google does. And I'm like, how? Well, I mean, it does. Apple says, but they don't know that Apple's like killing pixels, you know, or actually opens all the pixels on, you know, they don't actually know the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, so you're right.
I think it'll take a while for that to filter through because, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think you're absolutely right. Most people, they hear the privacy first message, and that's kind of all they need to know. It's like, well, they're doing these things, and they are privacy focused, and Android definitely isn't, you know, their opinion. Do they actually really understand the nuts and bolts, what's going on underneath? Maybe they do a little bit.
Do they want to? No.
No, I mean, no. Are they going to? Yeah.
Apple got that reputation very fairly. I mean, they really did. But also, you know, it'll take a while for that message where all the media is like, oh, now they don't care. That'll take a while to filter back out to the people who, you know, don't care about that. Because, you know, I don't know about y'all, but my friends do not spend a lot of time talking about like pixel tracking and cookies versus Flock or
super
or various forms
true.
Of data
what
trading.
Kind of friends,
yeah.
Do you have, Stacey?
You need new friends
up there on the island.
I really do.
You need to give your friends a questionnaire, and if they fail on all these topics, sorry, we can't be friends anymore. You got an F on my friendship paper. Should also mention that this event, because that was what we were talking about, will not just be the Pixel 7, the 7 Pro, and the Watch, but apparently we're going to get some new Nest products as well. This is information that
I wonder if it's the, you know, they had the Wi-Fi stuff, the Wi-Fi 6E routers that went through the FCC a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's that because they just did a camera refresh like a year ago. They did the Nest thermostat. Didn't they do a refresh like 2 years ago? The cameras seem to be like a 3-year refresh cycle. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. That's my thought. It's got to be the routers.
The routers. There's also been kind of rumors bouncing around about a smaller, cheaper Chromecast. Not that the Chromecast wasn't already pretty inexpensive, but this one would just stream in HD, not 4K. And I don't know. I think the rumors I was seeing was like $25 or something. Pretty inexpensive.
No Stadia talk, so, Mr. Howell?
I haven't
Stadia
heard anything talk? About any Stadia hardware. Nothing.
I wonder why.
Strange. You say with a slight grin.
Cruel.
That is definitely offending 2-3% of the people watching or listening to this show.
2-3%?
I don't know. Is
more
that
like
high?
Half %. Half %.
Now we're offending them even more, and this is how it goes when we talk about Stadia. No matter how we paint it, we hear from that small percentage of people who really, really care a lot about Stadia. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to the event. We will certainly be doing live coverage of this. This is, of course, a Thursday morning. I think, I know, later on that morning, we have Tech News Weekly, the show I do with Micah. So we'll certainly be talking about the information on TNW that later that morning, early afternoon. But we'll be doing live coverage of the event that day as well. So I guess keep posted for information as far as when that's
Stay tuned.
Happen. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Don't touch that dial.
Don't touch that dial. Yes. And speaking of don't touch that dial, let's take a break. Thank the sponsor of this episode of This Week in Google, and then get back to, you know, I have to say this rundown has a lot of Google in it. It has some non-Google stuff as well, but we've got some Google topics to talk about. And I was also thinking, like, maybe in the third block after the second ad, it can just go full democracy. It can be like, you know what? It's Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. What do y'all want to talk about? I'll just, like, I defer. So, you know, it can go wherever it needs to go. How do you like that, Leo? All right. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Hover. It's time to make plans and let Hover help you achieve them. If you're a blogger, if you're creating a portfolio, maybe you're building an online store, maybe you just want to make a more memorable redirect to, you know, an important page like your LinkedIn page. Well, Hover has the best domain names and email addresses just for you. Email at your domain name is key to connecting with customers and also for building trust for your brand. They have domain-based emails for all of your needs, be it small or large. It's really easy to set up. You can add as many mailboxes to your domain as you need. When your domain renews, your mailboxes will as well. They've got excellent prices. Their most popular mailbox is a no-brainer solution for business owners, and the price is unbeatable. And you get access from anywhere, so you can use the email app you're already comfortable with. If apps aren't your thing, you can just use their webmail, and then you can access it wherever you like. I love Hover. You know, I have a number of domains registered through Hover, and I think the experience of buying through Hover is just so easy. I'm so used to the streamlined approach. I never feel like I'm being like pummeled or upsold to. And Hover actually isn't there to upsell you on stuff you don't need anyways. They just want to help. So they have pro-level tools, powerful domain and email management tools that actually are super intuitive, very easy to use, whether you're a web pro or just getting started. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. They make the whole service, the whole process really easy. It's also very private and secure with Whois privacy protection included with your domain purchase. Your private information will remain exactly that. It's going to remain private. It's a really good way to reduce spam and then also protect yourself from unwanted solicitations across the web. And then Hover Connect lets you pick the services that you want to use to build and host your website. Connect actually helps you start using your domain name with just a couple of clicks, making it super easy. At Hover, you're a customer. You're not a source of data, so you can take back control of your data with a reliable, tracker-free email. Hover is trusted by hundreds of thousands of customers, myself included, who use their domain names and email to turn their ideas into a reality. So whether you're a developer, you're a photographer, a small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. All you got to do is go to hover.com/twit. You're going to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year when you go there. That's hover.com/twit. Make sure and go there. You'll get that 10% off your domain extension for a full year. Hover is awesome. If you haven't checked them out already, go do it now. We thank Hover for their support of This Week in Google. I don't know if there's a whole lot here, but Sundar Pichai had a talk earlier this week at the Code Conference in LA. I guess this was just yesterday. So it was this week, but it was also just yesterday. And a lot of what Sundar Pichai was talking about kind of focused on competition. He actually called Google pro-competitive. We are pro-competitive, pro-competition. And, you know, used the opportunity to point out other companies doing similar things that they would see as competition, right? Microsoft, Apple as ad competitors, touching on what you were talking about a little bit ago, Jeff. TikTok is one example of kind of cutting edge video competition. So Google's, kind of out there making it known. If you thought there was no competition and that Google was running away with anything right now, regulators, no, that is not true. we've got a lot of competition that's making things difficult for us right now and keeping them nimble, right? TikTok was kind of one of those examples where he's like, hey, you know, they're doing, who saw TikTok coming? They're doing crazy things. Yeah. If you thought social was locked up and locked into certain companies, TikTok has proven that there is still room for others to innovate, to come up, and ultimately disrupt the status quo. And then, talked a little bit about Google's acquisition of Fitbit. He did mention that Fitbit features coming to the upcoming Pixel Watch. And, of course, eagle-eyed viewers saw a Pixel Watch on his wrist.
Nice.
So, you know, there was a little hidden Pixel Watch, something to look forward to there. But
looks nice. It should be about 10 times bigger, I think.
You want the Pixel Watch to be larger than it looks
in
the photos?
No, I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
I'm joking.
I want it to be as large as the Apple Ultra. Samsung.
Yes, right. Yeah,
I want the Pixel Mondo.
The Pixel Mondo, the Pixel Chonk, Chonker. Yes.
I want it to be as large as the Samsung one myself. Howell, you have one of the recent ones from Samsung, right?
Yeah, the Samsung Watch. Yeah, I wish I had it in
Ultra something
right
other, five something other.
Yeah, yes, exactly. The Samsung Galaxy Watch.
It has
the
long name.
Four, is it the four or the five? Five Pro.
I think it's the five.
Yeah.
I think it's the five.
That's right, Watch 5 Pro.
You let me just try it out and put it on my wrist, and I loved it. It was the perfect size. It wasn't too tiny like the Apple Watch is, in my opinion. And I think it's not too big for everybody, but it's definitely big enough for people like you and I to have large hands.
I wish all watches were more long. Not too big for everybody? Have you met my floppy little tiny wrists?
You are the exception.
Apple Watches.
You are the
exception. I'm a woman.
I want to see Stacy be the hand model for the Chonk Watch, just to get an idea.
The Chonk Watch. Man. I mean, I feel like the Chonk Watch is probably I was at a meeting, and there was this guy, and his watch was it was the size of the bottom of this can, and it would, it was bigger than his actual wrist, and I was like,
showing off.
Yeah.
No,
I don't want him that large.
Watch.
Oh, really?
It was ridiculous.
It was a what watch?
I mean, it wasn't a good, I think it was like a Samsung watch. It was a smart watch, but it was ginormous. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
Some of them are.
And
just,
see, I like the watches as jewelry myself. They got to look good first off, but having the smart center is just a bonus. And I think Samsung has been the only one that's really been able to get that right, in my opinion. The Apple Watch is cool and it does a lot of fun things, but it still doesn't look like a watch to me. It just looks like some more wearables, not necessarily jewelry to me, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of them.
What if you got the Hermes? Oh, no, that was a leather strap. They have a fancy
strap.
Metal one, don't they?
Yeah, and it's just the strap, but I like the faces of the Galaxy ones, and I always have, going back to their original ones. But this Pixel one looks like it could be a nice piece of jewelry as well. It's just really clean, and I like the round face on it.
Yeah, the round glass on the top, which on one hand looks really appealing to my eyes, but on the other hand, I'm like, wait a minute, it's really exposed. You know, at least on some of these other watches, you've got a little bit of a ledge up there that protects that glass from being the first thing that touches any sort of surface that you will run into.
Sorry, what does that pretend for bezels?
You know, I have heard, and I haven't really actually looked into this, but I have heard that the bezels on this thing are thicker than people seem to like. I've just seen some people.
Can't believe.
I guess you can't make everybody.
I can't believe that I spent two decades learning about chips and spectrum, and I spend at least 10% of my time talking about frickin' bezels.
The ongoing pursuit of getting rid of the bezels once and for all, right? Seems to be the never-ending story of technology.
What do you think this so-called Pixel Watch would cost?
What is it supposed to cost? And actually, I think I just found an article that has some bezel pictures.
Because I believe the Samsung was looking at right at 500, right?
Yeah, so, what is the price? I feel like we don't know exactly. Some leaks have said $399, although that feels really pricey. for a Pixel Watch. Especially, yeah, it seems like the price has been tipped to cost $399 for the LTE model. So Wi-Fi Bluetooth model, less expensive than that. Ooh. What, $325, three-ish, somewhere around there would be my guess.
You think that's too much for said Pixel Watch, is what you're saying?
I don't know. Yeah, it's...
Because if it's too much, then what do you feel like the Samsung smartwatch, Android smartwatch is justified at its pricing?
I mean, the Galaxy Watch has a history, right? And so they have a following. Yeah. Samsung also really creates high-quality hardware, as we talked about earlier. I think in some ways, Samsung justifies the cost of a more expensive device because of that.
Yeah.
Right. Google, historically, with the Pixel, even their high-end phones still cost less than a lot of other high-end things, although that price has really gone up, and it's way more comparable. But that's kind of been the history, mostly, as far as Pixel devices are concerned. So I guess there's a part of me that it would expect the Pixel Watch to be more competitively priced and not like, here's a $500 watch, which doesn't seem
like
it would
all
be
the other ones.
But but yeah, I don't know. You know, and then it comes down to, and we talked about this on All About Android last night. It was one of our, a great email from a fan of the show, MacFile, who is sometimes in IRC.
Hey, I know her. She's also in our club Twit.
She just pointed out her long history with Pixel devices and how phone after phone after phone, she runs into the same thing where the first year it's really great and then things start happening, you know,
they start slowing down,
has issues
batteries
with
going to crap,
the camera, the battery, these weird little things. And so, you know, I start to wonder about kind of Google's dedication to the longevity of its hardware, even though they're making promises about longevity from a software perspective, you know, 3 years of major system updates, 5 years of security updates. That's really great. But if I'm using a phone that's 2 years old and I can't stand to use it anymore because it's just getting all glitchy and everything, and that update pattern, you know, that update cadence, I don't know.
But then the conspiracy theorists start talking about planned obsolescence, right?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Some people do talk about that. I don't know if any of this stuff is planned, like down to the calendar date, you know what I mean? But maybe. Yeah.
It's planned.
I don't know.
I mean, it's planned in the sense that like a chip vendor or a software vendor will only support something for X number of years.
Yeah.
Right. So it's planned, like they know that you cannot physically buy a smartphone chip that will get security updates in support for more than like 4 years, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Qualcomm has programs that certify certain devices.
That is true. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, it's planned.
To that extent. Yeah.
Yeah, and Google says, you know, we're going to support this particular version of the OS for X number of years, or security updates for the Pixel 7 through whatever.
Right.
They do 2 years, or do they do three?
Now they do 3 years of major OS updates, so three, you know, major updates to Android, but a total of 5 years of security. But Not all of those years are they month-to-month updates, right? Like at a certain point, it's kind of like, yeah, we update up to 5 years, but that might slow down in those latter two years. And also, like, I'm really curious to see how the hardware holds up in 5 years. Like, of course, that's what we're asking for, is we want our hardware to last longer so that people don't feel this pressure, this need to fill, you know, landfills with a device that's 2 years old. And, you know, so that's great. But I mean, I have seen phones that are only a couple of years old and are insanely difficult to use because things just don't work the way they used to. And
that's for some of the premium devices too, right? It's not necessarily the feature phones that people are buying. It's some of the premium lines are still pretty much garbage after 2 years.
Absolutely. My wife stuck with her tiny Apple for ages waiting for the small Apple to come out, and it pretty much worked the whole time.
Mr. Jammer B has I believe he's got an iPhone 7.
iPhone 7 from 2014. Yeah, I'm going to get a 14
around.
And then I'll get the 21 in another 8 years.
Dang. Massive amount of respect for that, Jammer B. That is awesome.
Wow.
That's and so then this device is what, seven years old? Like, at what point was it, just in the last year that you're like, all right, it's time? Or have you been living with certain qualities of it over the past couple of years that you just kind of
well
put up with?
There's been apps recommended on MacBreak Weekly that I've downloaded to my phone and find out, oh, they won't run on my phone.
Okay.
And the walking measurement thing, the gait thing that Apple has, I would like that, but it doesn't run on my phone.
Yeah.
And on this last trip, Waze was refreshing very slowly, refreshing a lot slower than I needed to make turns.
Yeah. Oh,
so that's okay. I need a faster phone.
Holy moly.
A lot of U-turns on this trip, huh?
Well, not necessarily U-turns, but a lot of crazy turns.
I can only imagine how amazing it's going to be for you to get a new phone if you've been living with that phone
for seven or eight years.
That's... You're going to get this new phone, and it's going to, man, it's going to blow your mind.
Oh,
for sure.
So worth not getting a new phone for 8 years.
Yes. So refreshing after all that time. Wow.
Mr. Howell, did you have your hands on the 6A?
Yeah, I did. I ended up using, so I reviewed the 6A on All About Android, I think a week ago. It was last week's episode. And I used it a total of, I don't know, three and a half weeks. And, mm-hmm. I'd say, all things considered, I love the A series. I think the A series is a great category or variant of the Pixel phones because, you know, mm-hmm. price to what you get is just really high. You get a lot of value out of the A series, and I think in that price range, it's hard to beat it for a number of reasons. But this time, I definitely experienced some strangeness with the battery that I haven't experienced with Pixel phones to that degree before.
Yikes.
And it wasn't a total deal breaker, but and I think probably it comes down to 5G. You know, my 5G was active, and they say, well, if you turn off 5G, you get better battery. And I'm just kind of in this camp of like, yeah, but I shouldn't have to do that to get good battery.
Right.
If it's a feature that's on by default, like design for that to be a good experience. Not it's a great experience if you turn off this major feature. But there are other people that don't have that experience, so your mileage may vary. But I just, more often than not, I hit 7 o'clock, and you know my battery was it had lit up red because you know it was down to like 14%, and I'm just not used to that in this day and age. You know, I'm not used to my battery being that low that early in the evening.
This sounds exactly like your discussion you had several years ago about the Thunderbolt in LTE.
good memory. When was the HTC Thunderbolt? That had to be like 2011.
Man, that was a long time ago, but I remember you talking about that on All About Android all those years ago. And it's like, man, this battery is horrible. Oh, yeah. It's LTE.
Right. So it's kind of the same thing, right? It's like this next generation network. Great, the phone supports it, but it comes with a very large trade-off. And I was right. HTC Thunderbolt, January 2011 was the release date on that. Oh, that phone. Horrible battery life. But it was the first 4G phone on Verizon.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So the 6A, like, great phone. It's just, you know, understand that you might have issues with the battery. I
enjoyed
not
the 4A. We had the 4A until we traded it up for whatever she's got now. And the 4A was totally fine. And I'm like, this thing was only $300. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we only paid $300 for it. Like, dang, this just works, you know?
Absolutely. The A series, it's a solid series. But, you know, with the 6A now, you don't get the headphone jack, which was that was the last kind of like Pixel remnant phone in the Pixel lineup that had the headphone jack, if you care about that. So, you know, it has some trade-offs, but there you go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you.
That's okay. That's okay. I can talk about this stuff all day. But there's other stuff that we could talk about. And this is kind of along those lines. And speaking of regulation, which was kind of part of what Sundar Pichai was talking about, EU lawmakers want other Android phone makers to mirror in many ways what Google's doing with its Pixel update cadence. There's draft regulation that would establish, quote, eco-design requirements for mobile phones, cordless phones, that makes me chuckle. Why even call that out anymore?
Making a joke here?
I guess they still exist. There you go.
Remember that?
Drop the cord.
The dial tone.
Wow. I remember those corded phones, but with really, really long cords so we could go one room to the other. Then they just get all stretched out. And then the coils would like unravel in certain parts. So then they'd be like little squares and it would bug the heck out of me. I'd be, like spend all this time trying to like wind it back up. So it was.
Yeah, those are like the anti-OCD phone right there.
Yes. Yes, totally. And then they also said slate tablets. So basically they want to cut down on e-waste. The Pixel 6, as we mentioned, 5 years of updates. That's 3 years of OS updates, 5 years of security. And they want that to kind of be the case for all Android phones, at least sold in the EU. So extending the lifeline of devices from 2 to 5 years. They say that doing that is going to is equal to taking up to 5 million cars off the road. That's what the commission said. So... So yes, regulation, but regulation for the health of the world, I suppose. How do we feel about
that? I'm in favor of it. Well, I've been in favor of this sort of thing for any kind of connected device, because again, like chip makers don't support things for that long, or, you know, like when you spec out your design and you're going to buy like a certain memory for your phone, you know how many reads and writes it has.
Yeah.
So when you spec that out, you can spec to a higher standard. It's going to cost more, but it'll last longer, right? If you don't do, I don't know if I really love the EU regulating that it has to be 5 years. What I would like to see is expiration dates for every device at purchase, in terms of like, we will promise to support this for 3 years. Mm. So when you purchase that phone, you're like, okay, this is a $500 phone that I can use for the next 3 years. Yay. Or maybe you're like, I would buy a greener phone that is going to cost me $800, but it'll last for 5 years and I won't contribute to waste, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would rather see the market help decide this, because we have to regulate how long we're going to actually support it, like, or regulate that we have to tell people that, as opposed to saying you must support it for X number of years.
Because you must support it for X number of years really depends on how that device is built to begin with, right? Like, like a device that is $1,000 that Samsung puts its latest and greatest and best and loads it up, you know, that thing stands a much better chance, at least in my opinion, my limited opinion, stands a much better chance of lasting 5 years based on the fact that all of that hardware is... future proof to a certain degree, at least considering that, versus like a low end device that costs like $100 out the door, which we still need to have, right? So for some people, that's the device they can afford.
That turns into waste.
That turns into waste. But how do you ensure that a $100 device with the technology that is in there to make it that inexpensive could last 5 years? I don't even know that is that even possible? You know, again, it goes back to like, how do you even use a phone? Like, sure, okay, like, technically it's getting an update, but it's every command takes 10 minutes to execute. Like, that's just not usable. Why would you want to use that?
Mm-hmm. You could, the flip side of that, if you did regulate that and you wanted to make cheap devices, you would have to make light software that could run on those devices.
Yeah, that's
maybe.
True.
So, I mean, you're right, Jason. You're going to have to bifurcate it either the software side or the hardware side if you want to make inexpensive devices. And that's why I don't love the approach of saying it's got to last 5 years. But that's just me.
Right.
And there's the people who like...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's people who like lease versus buy their car. And like I drive my cars into the ground because I just don't think it's something I want to update. But some people are like, I must update my car every 2 years because it's a piece of me, you know, and it needs to be flexible.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, I don't think it's just an eco issue. It's also a consumer issue. It's
100% a consumer issue.
But it's being positioned as an eco matter by the EU because it's very EU-ish, but it's more consumer protection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that, I've argued about this not just point. For funds.
Yeah, but if you need a cheap phone, but it can't be a cheap phone anymore because it's required to do all these things for so long, then yeah, is it an inequitable market intervention?
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Is the trade-off
worth
it?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, really. it's not just the OS updates either. This draft regulation calls for repair parts and services to be offered for at least 5 years after that device goes on sale. Also calls for meeting a strict standard on battery life or bring back swappable batteries. Could you imagine if we had a resurgence in replaceable batteries?
Well, that's batteries are one of the biggest sources of e-waste.
Right.
So like if you can have your batteries have more discharges without losing capacity, that would be great. But I don't know if we actually have that technology at certain levels, do we? I don't know enough about batteries. I'm gonna allocate my bezel bezel knowledge over to batteries, so I'll be better for more going forward.
Yeah,
all the action is.
I mean, I feel like I saw. Let's see here. I'm looking at the 9to5 Google article. The EU's requirements. This is from the article. Would have to the batteries that meet the EU's requirements would have to retain at least 83% of rated capacity after 500 charge cycles. And 80% after 1,000 cycles. And then you've got companies like Apple. Their claim for iPhone batteries is that it holds 80% of their rated capacity after 500 charge cycles. OnePlus 10T, for example, they claimed it can retain 80% capacity at 1,600 charge cycles. So there's something in there that manufacturers are able to do to rate the health of their battery, and apparently, according to OnePlus 10T, because that's a huge jump from any of these other numbers, there's something that they can do to increase, you know, the health of that and get more charge cycles in there. So,
if you have to like lard the battery with like toxic chemicals though to make that happen,
yeah.
I haven't wandered the Best Buy phone department in a long time.
Neither have I.
Is there still a large selection of basically burner phones of
good question.
Buy this phone for very little and don't open an account?
I need to go to my Santa burner Rosa phones at
find
Walmart.
A Best Buy.
Yeah, I don't know the last time I went into Best Buy. I mean, are there a lot of are there burner phones for sale? I'm sure there are. Yeah. Okay.
You don't have to go to Best
economy,
Buy.
There
you
has buy to be a burner market phone. For it.
Yeah. You can buy them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Gas stations.
Yeah.
Gas stations, right. Grocery stores.
Crazy.
Now I need to find the Best Buy. I think
like, I have a new burner phone for every day of the week for my reporting. What about you, Jeff?
I got 365 burner phones. Burn a hole in my pocket.
Well, yeah. Leo basically does that just in the normal course of his business.
Yeah, right.
Facts.
That's just another day here at Twitch. Yeah. And then I think finally, because we've been talking a lot about Android and stuff, so we can wrap it up with this last one. But I think this is actually very cool. Android 14, which is, yes, the next version of Android that we haven't even started to see any versions of, any developer previews or nothing like that. We're just now starting to hear some aspects, some elements about it to look forward to. And I believe on last week's or the week before episode, y'all talked about the SpaceX and T-Mobile announcement that they would be bringing satellite connectivity to smartphones. Well, last week, Hiroshi Lockheimer actually tweeted about this and said that Google is working. They're designing for satellites. He said, we're excited to support our partners in enabling all of this in the next version of Android. And it has been confirmed by 9to5 Google that the next version is indeed Android 14 that Hiroshi was talking about. So satellite connectivity coming to Android 14, at least as a capability. And great for people who aren't served by kind of traditional connectivities, traditional cellular coverage. This would be for a smaller percentage of people. But
which is the MUST satellites or the other satellites?
I don't know that information is public yet, but it's just there's some similarity between, you know, what SpaceX and T-Mobile is doing and what Hiroshi was referring to. So I don't know if they have a direct relationship, but they're definitely working on building this functionality into Android to support something like that. So, yeah, I could totally see that.
And we thought
happening.
We'd see that on the new Apple phones, too.
Yeah, I did, too.
That was a rumor there.
Right.
Any of the satellite connectivity, though, it sounds like most of these companies are looking at something like texting, which wouldn't require SpaceX level constant
Isn't
always
that what
on
Apple
satellite.
Discussed this morning.
Did they talk
seems
about
like
it?
They discussed that. Yeah, it seems like they discussed that this morning, where it basically shrinks down the bits of SMS so you can get it faster over this so-called satellite connection.
Oh yeah, they did talk about it. My bad.
But that had to do with the watch. Is that what you're saying, Jammer B?
No, yeah. It's an iPhone 14. And does the Ultra Watch also have it?
Okay.
Explain the size.
There you go. Yeah.
The IRC says the satellite is for SOS calls. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
And that makes sense. I mean, like, the Garmin has their inReach, which was a surprise hit for them. And that's like a little... I have one. It's a walkie-talkie looking device that you can use
like
when you're camping to send an SOS. Yeah, well, no, not a walkie-talkie. It looks like a tiny walkie-talkie, but it's not a walkie-talkie. Sorry.
Gotcha.
And you can use it to send a little SOS in your location when you're camping. And you know, like as a woman who goes hiking by herself, I'm like, hello.
Super good to have that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I bought that for like $350. And so it makes sense that Apple's like, hey, that's a feature we could stick on our phones. And maybe one day it could be even more useful over time. Because once you get those economies of scale for the chipsets, that would maybe be awesome.
And that really ends up solving a problem that we've all kind of learn to live with because we didn't have a solution for it, which is that, you know, you don't always have connectivity everywhere you go with your phone. Now, if it supports satellite connectivity, eventually you could see a time where you kind of always do, because wherever it, you know, traditional cellular coverage can't reach, the satellite probably can. And that's some good progress right there. I like that a lot. So Android 14 would be something to look one at least one feature of Android 14 to look forward to. And who knows, you know, if that's the case, then I can already see it now, right? Like the Pixel 8 or whatever, now with satellite connectivity compatibility. But who the heck knows? We still need to get to the 7.
Is that Stacey, is that antenna specific to the satellite?
Which antenna?
To be able to get the satellite, is the satellite mimicking cell, or is it a separate kind of antenna?
I don't know that. Sorry, I didn't even know Apple introduced it. So now I'm like, Globalstar.
Past bezels. Get past the bezels here.
Okay, well, if it's Globalstar, you do have to have a specific transceiver in your device.
Okay.
Is Apple using Globalstar? That's like, these are the, like, again, just no found idea. Out they have this.
They just gave the high level.
Apple picks Globalstar for emergency satellite service on iPhone 14. One hour ago.
Okay, Reuters. So you would need a special antenna inside the device.
So is it possible, in other words, that Samsung could put one antenna in its hardware and Google could put a different antenna in its hardware and the software has to deal with both?
Yes, but it would be stupid to do that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that it won't happen.
It would be stupid because it would cost more. So if you have to have a special antenna manufactured as a radio, you're going to want as many people using that radio as possible, because then you can take your cost down on that radio. Because satellite radios... like part of the expense of satellite is because they require specialized equipment that doesn't benefit from the economies of scale that are in cell phones.
Okay, so queen of chips which chip is what am I asking here? Are the antennas, the antennae in in our phones, what are they, what chips are they built into? How many, you've got your core chips, but what chips are the antennae in? Is it something you just add on to an existing chip? Would it have to be a new chip?
It depends.
Chip?
So Qualcomm integrates their application processor, which is the brains of a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
There are now a lot more brains on a smartphone with a radio. So
okay.
Apple, though, because they built their own chip, they still use Qualcomm radios, but they don't use the application processor because they built their own.
Right.
That's one of the reasons they're in this big fight with Qualcomm. Anyway, so you could have your separate baseband chip for talking to your 4G, and usually now they're pretty highly integrated. So you'll have a baseband chip that talks to your 4G, your 5G network. I guess you could integrate that with, right now it's not integrated with the Globalstar. So you would need another chip on your board for handling. And the radio has the antenna plus a little, we'll call it an engine, a DSP processor, whatever, to handle the calculations of turning your airwaves into bits and bytes.
This is those not two things are overnight. So surely this has been in discussion in the field for quite a while.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, people have been it's been rumored for like 2 years. Yeah. And the other thing is the satellite companies for the last, in 2005, I was reporting on satellite companies that wanted to get into the cellular space. One of the big issues were that your satellite spectra, your satellite airwaves and your LTE or whatever cellular airwaves, you couldn't have both of those, right? You had to have two separate radios and that was expensive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you always had to have, up until probably 2008, maybe, the FCC said if you were going to do satellite connectivity, the majority of your connectivity had to deal with satellites and not with cellular on the ground. And they did that to separate the two things out. And then Philip Falcone came in with LightSquared and was like, the FCC said, yeah, okay, you don't have to, you can have this combo terrestrial thing and most of your traffic doesn't have to go through satellite. And then he was like, aha, I found a way to back my way into a cellular network. And then everybody was like, no. And then the FCC changed their mind. It's politics and technology.
So this is really good because we happen to have the queen of chips right here. So why not take advantage of it? So the announcement that Elon made with T-Mobile, he has different satellites, different birds going up, right? But how can T-Mobile say can they offer it only with one phone that happens to have this hardware? Whose phone is it? What are they off? I don't understand how T-Mobile as a carrier can offer it across multiple phones, or is it just one phone they're going all this effort to? How do you think that's going to work?
Oh, this is the T-Mobile SpaceX thing. This isn't the Apple stuff now.
I switched.
And I'm actually reading about Scooter X says Apple says they figured out how to use the iPhone's antenna. I'll answer your T-Mobile thing in a second. The iPhone's antenna and special software to compress to reach the satellites. Okay, so they don't actually they're using the they're
that's
actually
pretty nifty.
They're using the case. Well, no, they build antennas into the bezel into the edge of the phone. Sorry. Apparently, I just slept through this part of the presentation. Okay. With T-Mo in SpaceX, I don't know how that's going to work because I have not paid attention to that at all.
Right.
Sorry.
Fair enough.
I did learn a lot about Microsoft and 5G and AT&T, though, if you want to revisit that ever, because that was all day yesterday. I did a whole talk on that with them.
Did you ask them why we have to deactivate our 5G modem on our phones in order to get better battery? Did you ask them that, huh? No.
Oh, I can tell you why that.
Okay. No, I mean, I understand, actually. I just wanted to throw my upsetness around a little bit about the
ire. Battery.
Yeah, my ire. Thank you. All right. Let's. How about this? Let's take a break. And then I know when we come back, we're going to want to talk a little bit about this Twitter edit news. I'm really interested in this. I think I think it's very interesting how Twitter decided to go about this, and I'm curious to hear your take on it. And then pick out a couple of stories that you think out of this whole list you want to talk about, and then let's.
It's a revolution.
Yes.
It's anarchy.
Yes. It's a democracy. I am opening the floodgates. Any of these stories, let me know. But we'll start with the Twitter edit because I definitely want to make sure that we talk about that. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode of This Week in Google. And that is 8 Sleep. This show is brought to you by 8 Sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer. And I know because last night I did not get very good sleep. You know, it's been really hot here in the Bay Area and a lot of parts of the country. So it was really hot in our home. So we ended up sleeping in the one room that had air conditioning, which is the garage, believe it or not, which was great. We had air conditioning, but it just wasn't quite as comfy as my bed. And my bed would be even more comfortable if I had 8 Sleep technology running through it. The 8 Sleep pod specifically is the ultimate sleep machine. Consistent good sleep can help reduce the likelihood of serious health issues. It can decrease the risk of heart disease. It can lower blood pressure and even reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. Yet, still more than 30% of Americans struggle with sleep, and feeling hot at night, like I'm talking about, is one of the main causes of poor sleep. That's really what 8 Sleep is all about. It regulates the temperature. Leo has 8 Sleep technology, on his mattress. It allows him to make the bed hot when it needs to be, make the bed cool when it needs to be, cool it down. I mean, this stuff is really cool. I'd love to get my hands on some of this technology in my bed. But now you can fall asleep in record time faster than you ever have before, all thanks to 8 Sleep Pod. The pod is the only sleep technology that dynamically cools and heats each side of the bed, like I'm talking about. And that's to maintain the optimal sleeping temperature for what your body needs. And what you need might be different if you're sleeping with someone else in the bed. It might be different than what that person's body needs from a temperature standpoint. So you can use the pod to regulate. It's pretty awesome. With the pod, you can start sleeping as cool as 55 degrees Fahrenheit or as hot as 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Holy moly. The result, clinical data shows that 8 Sleep users experience up to 19% increase in recovery, up to 32% improvement in sleep quality, and up to 34% more deep sleep. And, you know, when you get more deep sleep, you can be confident that your mind, your body are moving through the restorative sleep stages that are absolutely vital for physical recovery, for hormone regulation, for mental clarity, all the good stuff. Even better, 8 Sleep recently launched the next generation of the pod. The new Pod 3 actually enables more accurate sleep and health tracking with double the amount of sensors. That delivers the best sleep experience on Earth. The pod is not magic. It's not quite magic, technically speaking, but it certainly feels like it. And that's the beauty of 8 Sleep. Go to 8sleep.com/twig. You'll get exclusive Labor Day savings through September 11th, right? This is September 7th at the time of this recording, so you still got a couple of days. 8 Sleep currently ships within the USA, Canada, the UK, and select countries in the EU and Australia. So if you're listening after September 11th, use the same URL. That's 8sleep, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/twig. And you can check out the pod and save $150 at checkout. 8 Sleep is pretty cool stuff. You got to check it out. And we thank 8 Sleep for their support of This Week in Google. So it's happening. We knew it was happening. We knew it was on the horizon. But now Twitter.
Wait a second. Wait a second, Jason.
Yeah.
Wait a second, Jason.
Yeah.
I got to ask a question first.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
You air condition your garage?
Yeah, so, okay, all right, so...
Your car, what very special car do you have?
No, it's our garage is no longer a garage. We converted it into a gym for my wife when the pandemic happened. Her business in San Francisco shut down, and so she moved her business up to Petaluma. And so we ended up converting our garage into her gym, And then her garage was getting really warm, so we got, you know, like a nice air conditioner in there for her to work out of. So it's literally, okay. It's the only room in the house that has an air conditioner. I still refer to it as a garage, even though it's actually more like a gym.
So yeah. Thank you very much. I just had this.
Is your wife a trainer?
She does personal training. She also does something called muscle activation techniques. So,
yeah. Oh,
that's
okay.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
That is pretty
so
cool.
So she treats people's muscular imbalance and stuff. It's kind of like PT, but it's a little different.
Yeah.
Nice. But yeah. So, and that comes with the added benefit on these really, really hot days when we need a place to escape. We've got the AC in the garage now, so we go in there. We watched Stranger Things the other night. You know, my daughter's brought in their Squashmallows, whatever, you know, those big stuffed animal things, and we got all, yeah, comfortable.
Wait, wait, can I, I'm sorry,
you got all cozy on the weight bench?
Yeah, our home doesn't have an AC either, but I have a window unit right here that's really loud. And then I have a floor unit downstairs, and Hardhead has a floor unit over there. So it can be challenging to get things cool.
Yeah.
I thought Petaluma was hot a lot. I mean, San Francisco, I get it because it's foggy 90% of the time. But I thought up where you guys are, it's hot a lot.
Well, not at all.
Well, I mean, it gets hot in the summer, but I think the beauty of Petaluma and the area that we live is that there's like this direct access of the wind coming from the ocean that at about like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, usually during the summer, we get this really kind of like ocean cool breeze that blasts through the town. Yeah. So it might be hot through the afternoon, and on hot Petaluma terms, it's like, you know, 90 ish somewhere around there. You know, sometimes it gets 95. Lately it's been like in the hundreds, which hardly
happens.
It was
113 yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculously hot, but that rarely ever happens yesterday. That's super rare.
Well, used to be it rarely happened.
Yeah, exactly, and now it's happening more, but we almost always get that nice cool breeze coming in. And
Jeff
and B is highlighting the Petaluma Gap.
It's the microclimate. I love the Bay Area and its microclimate. So I live in this microclimate. You live in that microclimate.
I told my family we basically just have to survive lunchtime.
Yeah.
Right after that, you can definitely feel a difference. Yeah, because I'm serious. You can definitely feel a difference right after that. The temperature just changes and it gets comfortable.
Just have a cold tuna fish salad sandwich and you're okay.
There you go. Don't bake anything in the oven for the afternoon. You know, save that.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry for that interruption there.
No. It's okay. It's one of the things that I love about Petaluma is that you get that at the evening. Although at the same time, sometimes I wish I could like go to an outdoor restaurant and be in shorts and be perfectly comfortable. And a lot of times in the summer, you can't do that in Petaluma. You need like a little layer because.
Yeah, you got
to
put on a hoodie.
You can't do it in Seattle
either. I wore a hoodie to the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, you need a hoodie
at the
beach.
San Francisco years ago. I came from Chicago, and I said, "Oh well, is it okay if I put an air conditioner in?" And they all just laughed at me. I couldn't understand why they were laughing, but then I learned soon enough. Fog comes in on cat feet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, I will say it's nice having a room with an air conditioner in it.
Oh, I'll bet. You know, it's like that. Jeez,
for nights like that, it would have been unbearable sleeping upstairs in our bedrooms, you know, on the 113 degree day, the evening of that, where we didn't get that cool down in the evening. So,
mm-hmm.
Now on to Twitter. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I love it. Yes, so Twitter. Twitter, this thing we love to hate and we hate to love. Now with an edit button, not quite for everybody, but Twitter is.
Have you gotten
finally,
it? I haven't gotten it.
I haven't gotten it yet, but apparently.
Your
it's,
Twitter blue?
I'm
blue. I have the blue button, but is it a different thing where you can do it up to 30 minutes and all this whole magilla?
Yeah, that's what it is. I don't know who they're testing this with outside of employees. I think it's kind of starting there, and then they're eventually going to open this up to test with Twitter Blue.
I thought
users.
I saw that it was going out to the blue people,
like right away.
The blue subscribers were getting it. At least I could have swore I read that somewhere.
I mean, eventually they are. I don't know if they are right now.
I can schedule my tweets.
Matters not. I'll never
can't.
Have it.
Different.
Edit them. I know.
Mobile.
This is a test tweet.
I can view the tweet and then. But then you know what?
No, I can only wait. I can't edit it.
And I don't think that you're going to be able to. My understanding is that right now employees are testing it. So you might see tweets on Twitter that have all the kind of symbols or the hallmarks of an editable tweet, which I'll talk about in a second. But I don't know that you can actually edit yet. Eventually, this is going to be a feature that comes out to Twitter Blue users. So you'll have to pay the, what is it now, $4.99 a month for the subscription service. And this might actually be a feature that's worth it, depending on how often you tweet.
Look like an idiot less often.
Yeah, right. But I think how they're doing this is actually really good. So essentially, you're going to be able to edit up to 5 times within the 30 minutes following the publication of that tweet. So you got
You can't make up your mind by then.
I know. 5 seems like a lot. They initially said a few times, and then they clarified up to 5 times, which, okay. That's a lot of editing power that you have in 30 minutes. But then after 30 minutes, you're locked in. I suppose at that point, you could still delete it and go again. But what happens when you edit a tweet, it will appear with an icon in the feed. It appears with a timestamp and a label. So it's really clear when you're looking at an editable tweet or a tweet that has been modified. And then if you tap that label, that actually takes you to an edit history. And I don't know why it never dawned on me that that would be a great way to do edit. Because I've been very kind of like hesitant on the edit button discussion, because I do believe that Twitter is, you know, it's used in so many different ways for good or bad. It's become an important kind of megaphone for certain people. And I want to know.
Well, what about Facebook, Mr. Howell?
Well, but I don't think that Facebook is used in quite the same way as Twitter is used for that sort of thing. Like,
with all the bazillion followers and active accounts on that, you don't think there's just as many voices that could be used to document things that happen in our history and whatnot the same way Twitter has?
Could be, but is it? Like, I feel like a lot of the communication that's happening in this way, using a social network to broadcast to many, many people, it seems to, and I could be wrong, my perspective could be totally wrong, but it really seems like Twitter has kind of filled that megaphone role.
As I think about like the George Floyd scenario, did that originate on Facebook or Twitter? I was thinking it was Facebook.
Facebook.
That was on Facebook. Okay, yeah.
So it has its place.
Yeah, and for sure.
Those things have been editable for how long now?
Can you go into a Facebook post that you posted 5 years ago and edit it?
That I don't know. But I know they've been editable.
You guys are all off Facebook, so I'll find out, because I'm still...
Yeah, I know nothing about it.
I did come back to Facebook, I should say. I am there.
But I remember when we talked about this previously... The API was the discussion when we previously talked about it, with people using it as a source in news stories, and things would get wacky.
Oh, that's right. How it would
embed
it.
But I'm like, nobody ever said that about Facebook, and Facebook posts were editable.
Yeah.
Right. Blog posts are editable, and there was an ethic about doing that you should cross out, you shouldn't erase.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
But that was just
I miss that ethic. No one does it anymore. We still do it.
I know.
Because I
see people just put update at the very top or at the very bottom, but no cross out. I've seen that.
The thing I've seen
at the bottom.
Sorry. The argument I've seen, I think I'm waiting for the edit button. I want it. But Jason, I think to make your argument, what I've seen is that someone could use it as a Trojan horse, that you could get in something that seems innocent. Or, I guess you put something in that's innocent, and then you edit it, and it gets all kinds of popular, and then you edit it in something noxious, and the noxious thing spreads. It's a bit of a stretch of a complaint to me. I agree with Ant. All these other mechanisms are editable. The problem I've always imagined for Facebook is that once something goes out in the RSS feed, you can't draw it back and change it. And so the only thing about the edit button that worries me is that I was hoping that Facebook was heading back to being a protocol and an API, in which case people could just take it and put it wherever they wanted to. But then that complicates the idea of editing. Maybe that's why the 30-minute thing, I don't know. But then does that delay the tweet going out to the RSS world? Is that the thing they're doing here?
That's a good question. I guess I don't think of, I rarely ever think of Twitter in terms of RSS feeds.
Right. Right. There isn't much of that anymore. But yeah. Even TweetDeck is a separate instance. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a part of me that appreciates having the record, though. Like, if you're going to edit, I don't know. There's, I like that control, I suppose. I suppose at a certain point, like, if I put something out there, to a certain degree, I'm kind of committing to it, and I guess that works for my brain.
I think
even
in
Facebook, I don't
edited.
Go back and edit things on Facebook. I just, it is what it
it's
is.
It's because you're a journalist. We just are like, let's just, we're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Go.
It is what it is. Go. Yeah. But I appreciate that there is that kind of historical record. If an edit is made, you can still kind of see what was there before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's better. That's better than Facebook or anything else. Well, like Facebook will tell you it was edited.
I think it's fine to
no edit trace.
Yeah,
I think it's fine to have the tag on there that says edit, because people are going to make just general mistakes. They're going to say something that comes out totally wrong from what they intended on saying, because especially if we're using phones, because we all know autocorrect just really does a great job with the things that we're trying to say.
Oh yeah, totally.
Expletives come out and things like that, and you're like, oh my goodness, I really did not mean for that to come out. Let me go edit this, because, you know, yeah. Autocorrect wrecked what I was trying to say. Not that I was just trying to get over on somebody and go back and hide my tracks, if you will, because sometimes mm-hmm. people just make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
You know, if
there are people who hide their tracks.
Phone, there are.
Yeah, I know that, yeah. But it's nice for the people that sometimes just make a general mistake.
They just don't reread their stuff before they
yeah.
post.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, hey, welcome to Monday. Wait a minute. Oh, crap. Today is Tuesday. Tuesday. Let me fix that. Welcome to Tuesday. Something as simple as that. You know,
mm-hmm. I just spent, I just edited through my manuscript another full 3 times beginning to end before I sent in my final line edit. And I'll do that over, and I've done it over and over and over and over again. But the idea of rereading one little tweet is too much to do.
Weirdo.
That tracks.
Yeah,
I
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's always after I hit send that I end up looking and going, oh, wait a minute. That thing, ah, dang it, too late. And I suppose for the month, I only really had Twitter Blue for a month. And it was nice to have that delay thing. But then it was like, eh. You know, do I really care that much? Like, you know, I'm going to misspell things. That's all right. I'm human.
Hey, you're only a journalist, you know.
Yeah, still, yeah. You let some things slide as a mistake, but when context is totally changed, that's a problem.
Yes.
You know, and then I know this is a bad joke, but there's sometimes when people want to tweet out the F word and it comes out the D word instead. D U K. Sometimes you want to go back and fix that. You know, there may be a reason they're tweeting that expletive. Who yeah. knows? But they should have the right to be able to fix that.
Yeah.
Man, I am just going to start tweeting out, duck!
Duck!
You're going to be like, what is going on? Duck!
What the duck?
I know what they meant. I know what that person meant. They said duck. Okay, so I'm opening it up. Who wants to pick a story? What is the story that y'all want to talk about that we have here?
ADT and Google ADT. And State Farm.
All right. That happens to be the next line even.
No, I figured I'd just make it real easy for you.
Cool. Wow. So tell us a little bit about this.
All right. So August 2020, it was a dark time. We were in the midst of the pandemic, and Google invested... They purchased 6.6% of ADT, and they said, hey, this security company is now going to resell our gear, et cetera, security gear, Nest cameras. And it was good. And this started happening, and ADT got a boost. Google didn't really get much of a boost, but it was a good deal for Google just because it gets their stuff in more mainstream homes. Now, this month, this week, State Farm said, you know what, ADT, we're going to make a $1.2 $1 billion investment. That's a 15% investment in ADT. And we're going to give you $300 million to play with. And Google said, yeah, you know what? We like what you're doing for us so far. We like this State Farm deal. We're going to give you $150 million. And if you do really well, we'll give you up to $300 million to play with. So this is, to me, a really interesting deal because for the longest time, we've been waiting for insurance firms to do more than just say, hey, you got a security system? Great, we'll give you a 5% discount off your premiums. Because with the smart home, they can actually do a couple things. There's more devices that they can see, use for like tracking things in your home, but they can also see if you're actually activating your security system. Mm. So we're going to start seeing discounts that maybe are a little bit more appropriate to like the amount of gear you have in your home and the fact that you're actually using it. Now, people who get the 5% discount and don't turn on their security system, they're probably not going to want to opt into using this particular State Farm product. They haven't created a product yet, but I'm imagining some of the things it might look like. So I'm really excited about this. And it also gives Google, everyone's in the insurance company or insurance world for a long time had been like, man, Google and Apple, they could totally team up and offer some sort of insurance based on their understanding of what's happening in people's homes. And this is, seems to be like Google saying, you know what, we're not going to do that. We're going to leave that to the State Farms, the insurance companies of the world. But this gets them kind of in the door talking and understanding the product a little bit better. So I think it's a really interesting deal. That's that.
Nice. Does it, I don't know why my mind always goes here, but when I think of kind of data sharing with insurance companies, I can't help but have a little bit of a red flag kind of reaction to it.
Yeah.
Is that warranted in a situation like this?
If they didn't let you opt in, I mean, what they're going to do is they're going to offer you presumably, and again, this is theoretical. This is presumably. Mm-hmm. But like if you opt into a program like this, you might pay less because you activate your security system religiously, right? Because you're probably going to be at less risk, is their thinking. And mm-hmm. so, and you'll also, you don't have to act. If you have to activate it, that seems like if you could only get insurance if you install Google right. products, that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
But you can still buy, like, there's insurance, like auto insurance that you get discounts based on your driving. Those are opt-in, and people mm-hmm. who drive really well, really. I would never buy a premium, buy that as an insurance product because I drive really fast and kind of aggressively. So I'm you? Not a good candidate.
That's hey, awesome.
Do you have like driving gloves and everything? You're just like, let's go.
I was figuring like Grandma Stacy down the road, just exactly 10, 2, and 4 here. Exactly at the speed limit.
Really?
No, I don't.
I was like, I even drove in New York.
You want an electric car because you wanted insane mode.
Yes.
I did. I wanted rapid acceleration. So when I pull out in front
ludicrous
of people.
Ludicrous speed.
No. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so I think it's probably good for insurance companies. It also brings the price of like things like water monitoring stuff, which is hugely valuable, but is also like super expensive. It could end up bringing the price of some of those products down to a point where more homes could have them installed.
Okay.
And that would be good. So I don't think this is like super nefarious just yet. I will say in the insurance, like the health insurance world, like if they're paying for a CPAP machine, they are actually making sure that you're using it. And some people don't like that health insurance companies mm-hmm. are getting data on the compliance. And that's actually not opt-in, which makes it a little dodgier.
Right.
But in this case, it doesn't,
it's opt-in,
it does not bother me.
You have the choice. It's in your hands to decide whether you want to go that route or not. And until we see a reason.
Now, if they look at like your teenage kid, they see them on the camera sneaking out and they're like, yeah, we're not going to insure that kid.
Right.
So that's a little, if they're like, there's certain, like you wouldn't want them seeing what was going on in your house necessarily, even if it was like terrible behavior, like you like to light fires in your living room, like on the carpet.
It's a hobby. It's a hobby. Yeah.
It's a hobby. I like to live on the edge.
I'm really good
at doing
that.
I wouldn't want them seeing that. But seeing like, oh, do you turn your cameras on at night or when you leave the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Good, good best practices that actually help their bottom line and yours and your safety and everything. So, okay, cool. I can get behind that. What you got, Jeff? Anything on this list that you?
Well, I still got to get my head out of the idea of the air conditioned garage. I'm still thinking, if Leo were here, we'd be looking up because you know I envision you coddling your car. Good night, honey.
You would be looking at how many BTUs
the car is. Leo and I would be looking up an old show called My Mother the Car, in which a guy's mother incarnated as his car, which would be reason to put it in an air-conditioned garage. But I go off on a tangent.
That didn't happen, Jeff. I'm just okay. Just go ahead and dispel any myths or rumors right now. My mother is not a car. And actually, our garage does not even fit a car anymore. It is completely converted. So.
Okay. I just wanted to get my head around this. I imagine the Howell family. Dad won't let us get air conditioning, but the car gets it. It's Toyota. He's more to him than us. All right. Sorry. I will leave this now. There's a thread I put up, which is a long thread. At least it's not a long essay, people. From V for Vendetta, G Von Joy, about Hollywood. And I didn't know some of this. Now, I knew that there was, you know, it used to be that studios would make the shows and distribute the shows and own the distribution channel, right? They'd own the theaters. And they would, if Paramount owned the movie theaters, then if you want to get into my movie theaters, screw you, you're going to pay through the nose because I'm only putting my movies in there, right? And that was happening until 1948. Which there was a big case in the Supreme Court leading to the Paramount Accords, which they said, okay, we won't do that. And after, then there's antitrust. And after that occurred, there was a huge amount of growth that occurred, an increase in the number of independent movie theaters in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, an increase in the number of independent producers and studios. I'm reading for part of the thread here. The beginning of the end of the old Hollywood studio system. And the weakening, by the way, of the Hayes Production Code, which was a get the smut off the screen thing, right? So all this was going on, and it's fine, and everything's going along fine in Hollywood with us. And then in 2019, there was a case, and in 2020, the Supreme Court enabled a sunsetting of the law, which, according to this thread, ended last month. It was a two-year sunsetting. So August 2022, the Paramount Accords went away. And so now what you see happening is that the various new studios, whether they have old names or not, so Disney or Discovery now owning Warner Brothers, who did Amazon buy?
Paramount?
What?
MGM,
thank you.
MGM.
And so what you're seeing, I think what we're seeing is the nascent beginnings here of the old studio system where Disney can make the show and then they distribute the show and they own the distribution channel in the form of Disney Plus. And Warner Brothers has its with Discovery, which is a ridiculous structure. Amazon will have its. And we end up in this world where nobody will distribute anybody else. And we're in the position where you choose to go to the Disney Plex or you go to the Warner Plex or you go to the MGM Plex. And we get stuck with their bundles of what they choose to show us, which is basically where we're headed right now. And as the thread says, you're basically in a world where eight people own Hollywood and Disney owns half of it, having bought Fox, and again, Amazon having bought MGM. So I found it really interesting to think through where that is. And as she says, it seemed to make sense at the time to get rid of the. She's being a little bit sarcastic to get rid of the Paramount Accords because hey, all the studios that were in the original lawsuit don't even exist anymore, and movie theaters, who cares? But the principle that was behind that antitrust action, sunsetting, leaves us vulnerable now to, I think, to my mind, a kind of bad era for entertainment. And finally, I think I mentioned earlier, no, I mentioned this in class today, sorry. NBC is rumored to be considering giving up its 10 o'clock hour to local stations because, primetime, it's worthless now. Broadcast, it's worthless now. And so it's a really interesting time where the big guys are going to try to monopolize entertainment. But we have TikTok. We have YouTube. We have all kinds. We have podcasts. We have this show. We have all kinds of other entertainment. And what's going to happen in that new mélange, I don't know. So sorry I turned that into a soliloquy here, but I find it absolutely fascinating to imagine what's going to happen to online entertainment. I'd go back and see previous discussion of Apple and phones and advertising. It's going to be really interesting to see how this works out here. So that was my little moment. Thank you. This is why Leo tries to avoid democracy, so I don't go off on a soliloquy.
No, I think it's valid, and I'm reading through this thread. It's a really great thread. She points out at one point that the original decision actually ultimately increased the number of independent movie theaters.
Yep.
And now we're seeing, you know, kind of in the current era that we're in, this collapse of movie theaters, filing for bankruptcy. What's the latest?
Well, part of that's like the pandemic. I mean, nobody. Yeah.
For sure, but that certainly plays.
Suck these days.
That certainly plays.
That's not
into
true.
This.
Not all movies suck. There's
no, not all no. suck. Movies but out I think there. On the whole, I don't think. I mean, you know, having founded Entertainment Weekly, I just don't think there'd be the same kind of coverage now that there was 30 years ago. There are some good movies, but I think it's less. I think TV became there was a time when TV became better than movies.
Up to and including
Sopranos.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll buy that for $1.
He's going down. What?
I said I'll buy that for $1.
Yeah. Oh, geez, that sounds like your grandma. Wow.
I'd buy that for $1.
Yeah, my mom.
Yeah, okay.
I'll buy that for $1. Or 50 cents if it was my grandma.
Yeah. Or a penny. Inflation. A shiny penny.
A wooden nickel.
Yeah. That is interesting, though.
Yeah. So that's mine.
I really hope that theaters don't completely go away. But then I'm also thinking, like, when is the last time I went to the movie theater to watch a movie? I don't even know.
I have no desire to go to theaters. I think I've said before, I've only gone to see whatever the newest Star Wars was, and I went to see Black Panther because of Chad. Mm-hmm. Because in my opinion, the movie-going experience is just, it can't beat being on my couch on a nice, clear screen with decent sound, and it's dark, and there's no interruptions, and people talking on phones, or babies crying, or sneezing and sniffling happening all around.
Get off
me,
my lawn!
Yeah, I mean, it's a three-hour
movie. You can pause it and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, then there's that. But I did go see Top Gun.
Popcorn's nowhere near as good.
Well, so that's the thing. You know,
my popcorn's better, dude. Mine is better. I throw it in a pot and make the popcorn. I don't do that instant crap.
I like the popcorn. I'm going to go with Jason here for a second, but I'm going to burst his bubble or his popcorn thing. So I, too, missed popcorn, right? And I don't go to the theaters because I don't want to get COVID, but I still miss the popcorn. So about a year and three quarters into the pandemic, I said, screw it. I'm not going to go see a movie, but I'm going to go to the theater. I'm going to buy a small popcorn and eat it in the car like a sick F.
I bet it was so good.
A sick
though.
Duck?
No, it was terrible. It was awful. It was kind of oily and rancid.
It was awful.
And so I was missing it so much, I didn't miss it anymore.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe it lacked context, though. Like, you were sitting in your car eating theater popcorn.
That is a sad image right there.
My dad used to send us to go get popcorn for him from the theater.
Really?
And that was a regular request.
Yeah.
Queen Pruitt, she had her moments like that from time to time. But there's nothing like just getting the kernels yourself and throwing them in a pot and just shaking the daggum pot on your stove and popping them right
butter,
in there.
Butter, what's your butter stance?
butter, yes. Salt.
Yes.
yes. All of the above.
Yes. Yes. There's one word. But no, and I did go see Top Gun in the theater.
See,
because
that's the one that
friend,
I really wanted this summer to see, and I still have not seen it.
I did go see it only because my good friend that's in film, you know, she recommended it, and I said, all right, I'll go do it. And I really did enjoy it. But I went when there was damn near nobody in the theater because I didn't want to be bothered with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Well, in are your like, we don't have now any like normal, like we don't have any of the fancy theaters with like the recliners and the food and stuff. And my child, correct, very spoiled, will not go sit in a normal theater anymore.
It's got to be the right recliner.
Absolutely
one.
Refuse.
Where the seats right. are yeah, like three like it's, times it's the size.
Home
of
has just gotten so much better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of get it because I'm like, when I'm crammed into those seats again for like 3 hours, I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, yeah. yeah, this movie is not transporting me enough to make it worth my while to sit here for this long.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The theater here in Petaluma, I don't know how many years ago at this point, but got converted to the big recliner style, you know, totally cut down on the amount of seats in the theater. That's not a bad thing.
When we decided we were done with the theaters, this was several years ago, and I think it was Atlantis was the movie because we all went as a family so the kids could see it. And there was a kid behind us that was every 2 seconds just doing that. And okay, so Queen Pruitt, being a mother, reaches into her purse and grabs a tissue. And she politely reaches back to the mother behind us and hands the mother the tissue. And she's like, yeah, oh, here you go. Hope to help you out. And mom took the tissue and blew her own damn nose. Didn't even give it to the child. So we listened for another hour. Hadn't been back to the movie theater since. You know, because it's so much better at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Aunt, I'm gonna agree with you. So my mother made my sister and me, and I in turn pass this on to my children, an absolute obsession about hating open mouth chewing.
There's that too.
I can't bear with
can't
that.
Can't stand
right?
it.
So now that it's one matter if you got popcorn, but now when they're practically serving you a steak dinner in the theater.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
You know, it's the smell and the interruption and the and the chewing and no, mm-hmm. no.
Yes. No. Yeah,
the movie's
sorry
just not that
derailing.
Good. That's what we do. This is the show.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for this, right? Yeah,
it's like the Twig crew complains about movies.
I love it. I used to work in a movie theater, so I would be behind at one point. Behind the concession stand, right? That's where you start, of course, when you start working in a movie theater.
Yep.
And making the popcorn. And I realized just how much of that oil goes into the canister. I mean, and of course, this was back in like 93. So I don't know how different it is now. But I mean, when you really see what they're putting into the canister, what we were then, I mean, it was buttery scented oil. That's really what it was.
It's not
like
butter.
Yeah, it's buttery scented oil. And I mean, you put so much in that, and the popcorn came out and, you know, fully salted,
yellow.
Yellow, like it looked radioactive.
Nuclear.
Yeah, that was how I made the popcorn back then. I wouldn't make it like that now, but it was nice to have the control. But once you've seen that, it's kind of like, oh, it takes a little bit of the mystery away. It's like, I don't
know. This is how the
sausage is made. The oldness is going away. It's going away.
Yeah.
Right? The essence of you know, mass media, watch out here. I've got a professor.
Oh, we're back to mass media.
Here it comes. Here it
watch
comes.
Out. Yep.
I'm not going back to Gutenberg.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's Gutenberg in all this?
But I'm just going to go to mass media. So it really was steam powered presses and all that and the model. You consider just radio, right? Broadcast. We've basically gone through a century of broadcast and it's over, it's gone. Mm. It's meaningless now. It's crap on primetime. It's and radio in the United States. Nobody's listening to radio. They're listening to the podcast like this one. Thank you very much.
Right.
I listen to NPR
and movie theaters.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's because you're effete.
Effete. I'm 2 feet, Jeff. 2 feet.
Two of them. You just can't see them because this is a podcast. Yeah, I listened to a little bit of radio. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, this is so off topic, but a couple of weeks ago, I was away for a few days, and I went to a cabin out, you know, a couple hours away, and the radio in the cabin was tuned to a local radio station that played nothing but like 60s and 70s kind of rock, you know, roots stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the music that I love and some of it that I'm kind of like, okay, I could take or leave it. But what I loved about it, I experienced what kind of older school radio was, because they had the single announcer that, you know, was just like sitting there in a dark radio station, totally curating the playlist, talking about why this song is so cool. I remember back then when I went to this concert, blah, 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 you know, kind of spinning stories up around the music. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was just one of those moments. Like for a couple of days, I was listening to this radio station and just like, man, I wish we had more of that, but we don't anymore. What we do have on radio is highly programmed by a computer. And then you have, you know, a little color commentary in between, but it's just not the same. It was a really
AI. If you have the licensing rights, you could do that for a podcast. You know, the problem there is the song licenses.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It was, well, TikTok solves that, right? I mean,
well, I'm just thinking, like, because there is a question about licensing for the new, like, for the new streaming and the new way we consume content, and our IP laws really haven't adapted or changed for that, but. Wow, no. What are we talking about?
Well, that's a good point.
So I'm looking up and I'm like, how did we get here?
Yes,
that's a good point. You could do that on TikTok if you just pull it, put the camera for yourself, let it play, and you give your commentary, and you can adjust the volume and stuff inside of the TikTok video.
It's
and
your new radio station. It's Ant Radio.
Yeah, that's a pretty slick idea.
Questlove does these. Things where he goes on little Twitter threads about like his ideal DJ party playlists or his ideal playlist for X thing. And then he doesn't do it, but someone always goes and takes that thread and then pulls the songs into a Spotify playlist, which is kind of a janky way to have to do it. But it is really cool because then you get like arguably a wonderful DJ and musician explaining like, why he loves this song, why he plays this song next, what his goal is when it's, you know, for what it, like, if it's a get your that lover in the mood playlist. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
But I would pay to have Questlove do a podcast where he kind of does 10 songs, you know, but he can't do that. I mean, licensing all that music would be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nice, though. It was a nice experience. And I think folks in chat have figured out the radio station that I'm talking about. Declare mentioned KOZT in Mendocino. So if there is some sort of like online broadcast, rebroadcasting of that radio station, check it out.
Well, you can do that. Well, you can do most any radio station.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm sure you can find it and you can see exactly what I'm talking about. There was something very just kind of like soothing about listening to it. It's like, I might not like every song that you're playing, but I love the experience. It really just took me back to when radio was like that, you know? Just isn't anymore.
KOTZ, listen now.
KOZD.com/listen-now. There you go. Yeah. Nice. Check it out for yourself. And then, Ant, I don't want to leave you out of this democracy. Is there a story before we get to the change log that you want to make sure we talk about?
The only thing that came to my mind was from Adobe. And this comes from Petapixel. What line is this? I didn't say what line. Line 100.
100. Easy to remember.
Line 100. And this was more of a why. Like, why is this? But Adobe is launching a camera app for, quote, serious photographers. And we all are familiar with Mr. Mark Lavoie and his history with computational photography, especially back with the Pixel days and so forth. Well, he's now at Adobe, and Adobe is pretty popular with their AI as well. And when I saw the headline and it said it's for serious photographers, I'm like, why would this even be considered? Because when people are shooting with their phones, the AI really takes a lot of the thought out of it. You don't necessarily have to think about shutter speed and ISO and stuff like that, unless you really, really want to. And even if you really, really want to, you tend to go back and just say, let me just hit the shutter button by default because it's going to look good. It just flat out works now. And I just thought it was interesting. Like, why Adobe? What's the point of this? And I'm an Adobe fan, but I don't know why. I'm curious to see what's going to happen in October because Adobe Max is coming up. I'm sure this will be part of the discussion then.
And is this a so is this a control app then, or is it
right? That's just what I'm saying. They have an app called Lightroom Mobile. I'm sure y'all know about that. Mm-hmm. Inside of Lightroom Mobile, there is a camera functionality that allows you to do things like long exposures, where you can change the shutter speed to be a lot slower, or change it to be faster, and really have some manual controls, just like you would if you picked up a camera body. And it's okay.
Using phone's camera, though, I guess is what I'm trying to figure out, right?
Using the phone's camera try to simulate controlling.
Understand.
You're not necessarily changing the aperture because apertures are fixed on smartphones, but you can simulate an aperture change as far as how much light you're letting in on these things. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But again, I think a lot of that is already handled in the AI today. Maybe 4 years ago, yeah, that's pretty cool. You got so much more control. But now the AI is so smart, and it could figure out your scenario, and it's already taken a gazillion pictures before you even hit the shutter.
And yeah, so, right.
What's the point of this? I don't know. I'm just curious to see what else they're going to say in October. I hope to go to Adobe Max. They gave me a ticket. I just can't quite afford the daggum hotels down there. Good Lord.
Where is it being held?
It's in L.A.
L.A.
Can you find like an Airbnb or something?
I've been looking. It's quite pricey. Yeah. But yeah,
hotels tonight. I mean, I had to stay in the city in Manhattan for I was doing a conference on Monday and Tuesday and with a dinner in between. I just didn't want to drive all the way home. So what the hell? And New York, you could pay $400 or $500 for a hotel room easily.
Yeah.
And I got this place right across the street, nice hotel, AC, $200, which in New York is amazing.
Yeah.
Nice. So
but that's all.
You said Hotels Tonight?
Hotels Tonight is the app. You can't do it very far in advance, right. And you're betting whether or not it's going to work, but yep. It has good.
Well, and I'm fine with the last minute stuff like that. I've used last minute services like that, and it worked out well, but I don't know. Maybe I'll give that
a
look.
We want you there, yeah. It's your people. It's your things. It's your stuff.
It's your people.
Chickenhead in the chat room says, send Uncle Leo the bill. No, I'm not going to do that.
If I had a garage there, I'd let you sleep in it. But
And a squishmallow with your name on it.
Any number of squishmallows, actually. My daughter is quite obsessed, to be honest.
They are squishy.
They are. They're very comfortable. And assorted sizes, too. should we do the changelog? Man, there's a lot in the changelog. I don't know that we're going to do all of these, but let's jump in and do the changelog. Sound the horns.
The Google changelog.
Oof. So I did the thing where I, culled a bunch of stuff and threw it in there, but I never actually, pulled the information out. So this should be interesting. YouTube could be relying on some headlines here. YouTube TV apparently adding 5.1 audio for Apple TV. So I don't know how much content on YouTube TV is actually created with 5.1 in mind. I honestly don't know. But there you go. If you've got an Apple TV and you've got a nice 5.1 sound system at home, you'll be able to watch it with your Apple TV. Some Google TV sound stuff. 5.1. There you go. Google Hangouts. So the long dragged out, whatever you want to say, march to the death of Google Hangouts continues. You can download any of your Hangouts history if you wish to do so, all of your years worth of conversations that might be hiding in your Hangouts history via Google Takeout, which is always just a bucket of fun, let me tell you, to download anything from Google Takeout. I'm happy it exists, but holy cow, sometimes it's a real pain in the butt. It's going to be there until January 1st. So if you want to do this, now's the time. Get in there, download your history. I'm like, what are you going to do with that history? Like, I, Like, I
let
get it.
Let it go.
Yeah, just let it go. Let it go. Like, are you really going to search for that message from 10 years ago that you said you were going to take out the trash?
I'm still wondering why Google
home?
Is still talking about this dadgum service, man. Just how about Google just let it go? Quit giving
stick
us all
a knife in its heart and let it die.
They just they want people to feel like they got ample preparation.
There are
the
people who are going to they're going to want to have it. I mean, yeah, the digital clutter.
Hurry up and kill this dadgum app.
Yeah,
let it go.
I do not have the need to back up my my messages. Although I am the person that doesn't trash emails. I just archive
I trash
everything.
Emails. I trash everything.
Really?
No, I don't.
This is smart.
I trash some,
but I also archive a lot, too.
Archive everything.
Nothing.
I don't know why, but everyone's...
I know why I do, because I've had to go back
several
times. If
you're going to archive it, you should just... If you're going to archive... If it's important enough to archive, then it's important enough to print out and stick in a binder for whatever year.
Oh, my God.
Because if it's that... Oh, I'm serious. People are like, what if I want to go back and read my letters to my high school boyfriend? I'm like, then... Print them out.
I got
to
tell you, you're correct on that. I don't print them out, but I put that email in multiple places because there's been times when I've needed it to print it out later on. So, yeah.
I mean, but Google search is so good that if I really need to find that thing, I can usually find it.
Man, searching Gmail is a pain in the...
It can be.
So much junk people have sent us.
Oh, gosh. It is so bad. You put in so many different qualifiers to try to narrow it down.
You're like, who was that person we were talking about? Was it Samsung televisions? Was it, you know, and you start searching things and you're like, oh, crap.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to find this thing. Yeah.
And especially on mobile, trying to search your mail on through the Gmail app is it's pointless. You can't do it.
I have a shelf filled with my paper notebooks for the past, which is ridiculous because my handwriting is so awful I can't read it.
You can't read any of it.
I throw everything away.
And I threw a whole bunch. But then I went through and I found the notebook that was the original notebook of the original ideas for Entertainment Weekly and the design and stuff. And
don't throw that away.
Yeah.
Throw it away.
See?
Or give it to a museum.
Hard.
Wow. If nobody else wants, see if someone throws. If no one wants it,
hard-hearted Higginbotham.
Throw it away. That's
me. What's fascinating. She's on both ends of the spectrum, essentially, because about 2 weeks ago, she was telling us we need to put stuff in a safe.
You do. I mean, like your birth certificate.
the really, really, really important things.
Like. Yeah. You know, your passport, I just had to get my driver's license for the fancy new, if you want to fly after May 30th or whatever, driver's license. And I had to bring in my birth certificate. I had to bring in my social security card, my passport, like letters from my maiden aunt from the 1800s. I mean, it was just ridiculous. The last bit was not true, but yeah.
But basically, Google Maps now has some eco-friendly features for navigating to find gas or to find kind of charging stations. You can tell Maps actually what kind of a vehicle you have, and it'll help you navigate to the places that you need to, keeping in mind how to keep things fuel efficient, that sort of thing. So that's kind of neat. It launched in the U.S. and Canada last year to highlight those routes with less energy, and this is kind of an extension of that. So I'm sure you've already seen that in the Maps.
Have we not seen any moral panic about this? Telling it what type of car you're going to have? People going to freak out.
Oh, no.
Why do I want to tell Google what kind of car I'm using?
Why should Google know that I'm driving a gas-powered vehicle?
You don't have to tell it.
Yeah, it's true. You don't.
It's in the privacy of my garage, my air-conditioned garage.
Air-conditioned garage.
Oh, Lord.
I should really stop calling it a garage. I think it's what I've learned today. It's not really
the moral of this show is don't call it a garage.
Yes. If I've learned anything today, it's that.
I had to stop myself from trying to interrupt the commercial to say, whoa, wait, what did you just say? I waited very patiently till afterwards.
Meanwhile, Club Twit listeners are going to be like, why are they suddenly talking about his garage? They won't get into the ads context. But that's okay. I think we've built up enough information around it for it to make
we've explained it plenty,
at least some sense. Android 13 has, of course, a number of features that you may or may not have experienced already, but apparently they're getting some new features designed for business users, for keeping, primarily for expanding on the functionality that keeps, if you have a device that is a work and a personal use device, keeping those things separated. Why do you hate it?
I hate this because it just imposed upon me personal and work and made trying to sign into the phone when I got it absolute hell because, well, you can't, of course, you can't, Jeff, you can't do that with that account. I know. That's why I'm trying to have just one account. And it's to this day, it drives me crazy. Crazy.
No, that sucks.
I knew exactly where this rant was going to go.
Yeah. It always goes somewhere in that realm. Yeah,
it does. How many years have I suffered, Google? Still figured it out.
Will you ever be motivated to a point to like undo what you have and just
How
like?
How can I do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But
yeah, I would. If I could, I would. But I can't imagine.
When you retire, just get rid of it.
Yeah, just throw it away. Throw it away.
Throw it all away.
Oh, that's my personal. See, when I retire is when I become that account fully.
So the one you bought? The one you pay for? Yeah, then yeah. I don't know what to tell you, my friend. You've just that's made the wrong choice at the beginning, and you'll suffer forever.
Oh.
It's basically like being born a woman, Jeff. You're just always going to have lesser opportunities, paid less, and suffer more.
Boy, you brought that around. Whoa.
Wow.
Okay.
Think about it, though.
Yes, I agree.
It's true. All right, back to the change log.
Okay.
Stacey's getting loopy.
It's time for waffles. We could tell it's time for waffles. Chrome OS game controls, something that Google had announced was coming, it's coming, and as that support is rolling out, Chrome OS 105 actually brings an early alpha version of these game controls. It allows essentially for you to have expanded touchscreen control of Android games using a Chromebook. So there you go. If you like playing Android games on your Chromebook, you will love this feature. Or I actually don't know if you will, but there you go. Look for it anyways. Let's see here. Android. Wow, I really didn't sort these very well. Android 13.
First. Who was the producer today?
Yeah, I know. It's not like I had too much to do preparing and understanding the stories that were going in the rundown today. The first patch for Android 13 is out. It actually fixes some issues, some pixel issues. If you have the Pixel 6a, you are not going to get that update. It is delayed. One of the things that I think this addresses was a big complaint that we were hearing about battery drain issues on the Pixel 6 and the 6 Pro. I have wondered if it's the same thing that I was experiencing with the 6a, but the 6a isn't on 13. It's still on 12. So maybe that doesn't matter. But nonetheless, if you've been experiencing a bunch of battery drain issues on your Pixel 6 or 6 Pro since upgrading to Android 13, you will want this patch because, from my understanding, it helps to address those issues and kind of bring the phone back to a better working order as far as your battery power is concerned. And then finally, and I should also mention the Pixel 3a and the 3a XL. We were talking highly about these devices earlier. They are getting their final update with Android, getting a final Android 12 update. And I think that's it as far as updates go for that device. So if you have the 3a or the 3a XL, you may have hit the end of the road for updates. So I'm sorry to say that. And then finally, the Nest Hub Max is getting some quick phrases. This is to allow you to skip the Hey G command. And so I think it bypasses the hot word and allows you to kind of set it up so that you can talk directly to the device without always having to say Hey G in order to do it. So I think that makes a lot of sense for a hub device like that.
We disagree.
Oh yeah, you don't like that?
Oh,
because there's too much.
It's too much to pre-program, so you've got to go in and do it in the app. I'm like, can I just say like, "Hey G, let's pre-program my quick phrases or whatever they're called."
I see.
But no, I got it. I hate opening apps.
Yeah,
I hate it.
Fair. Is the programming process like a beast in and
you
of
only
itself,
get four or? Choices? No, it's. I mean.
Listen to me. I hate opening an app. It's so terrible. I mean, God, I got to go into the Google Home app and figure this out. I mean, no, it's like six steps inside the app, but it's a voice. Yeah. The point of voice is that you talk to it and it does what you say. And yeah. I feel like Google, like Amazon has been pushing Madam A towards that. So you can do a lot, like you can set up a routine with your voice now. And I'm like, get on it, Google.
Yeah. Well, Duendo points out in IRC2 that the home app is getting very cluttered. It does feel like that sometimes.
Oh, my God. It's such a nightmare.
Yeah. I do not want to be in a situation where I have to open that home app, but sometimes I have to. There's not a whole lot I can
Never.
Do. Never. Never. And that is the Google Change Log.
Nicely done, sir.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We are going to get to tips, tricks, and all other things in a moment. But first, I want to take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is Nomad. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Nomad. Now, Nomad's founders actually met in Santa Barbara, California. It actually started as a Kickstarter project back in 2012. They had the goal of building ultra-rugged and minimalist tools for the 21st century that would integrate seamlessly into, you know, whatever you happen to be carrying in your everyday life. And in the past 9 years, they've been doing this a long time now. Nomad has expanded to offer a wide range of mobile accessories that really fit any need at this point, from iPhone cases, Apple Watch straps, wireless chargers, awesome wireless chargers, to premium wallets and passport holders, crafted with Horween leather. Now, Nomad uses leather from the Horween Tannery in Chicago that was founded in 1905, offers an unparalleled blend of quality and consistency. They're leather accessories that actually develop a rich patina with time that looks great and is completely unique to you. Also, the leather smells amazing. I actually have here, I don't know if you have an overhead shot, but I have, because I don't have an iPhone, right? But they do, Nomad does have some accessories for Google products. This is the Pixel Buds Pro. You can see the Pixel Buds Pro on the inside. This is the Horween leather case for the Pixel Buds Pro. And it just, you know, there we go. That's the Pixel Buds Pro case underneath. It just fits really snugly and securely on top. Has a little see-through light for the charging light to shine right through, allows me to get access to everything and, you know, doesn't, you know, get in the way of the use of the product. And it just looks really nice, very nice leather. Nomad offers convenient wireless charging solutions as well for your home, for your office and bedroom, with a suite of chargers for whatever Apple device you use, as well as the Apple Watch and AirPods. Nomad is now also offering AC adapters, so you can check out their new 30-watt and 65-watt GaN adapters. The crew at Nomad was tired of dealing with flimsy charging cables that seemed to be falling apart every few months, so they set out to engineer some of the most rugged cables around. I wish I had mine with me. I have some USB-C cables from Nomad at home. They are awesome. They are reinforced with a double braided Kevlar outer sheath and then a strong metal alloy connector housing. Nomad cables have been engineered for extreme durability and heavy everyday use, and they really feel like it. When you've got these cables in your hands, you're like, this is a solid cable. This cable is not going to deteriorate or it's not going anywhere. This sucker is going to work for a long time. They're also a climate neutral certified brand. Nomad is and always will be a company that prioritizes design and quality over everything else. One of the most important aspects to Nomad when designing new products is that they use the highest quality and longest lasting materials available. So they design all of their concepts from the ground up rather than white labeling existing products. You know that when you're getting a Nomad product, you're getting a product direct from them that is unlike anything you're going to get from anywhere else. I'm telling you, their products are awesome. I also have a high-speed charger. Again, I wish I brought it, with two separate ports, one port to power my laptop, another port to fast charge my phone at the same time. it's just awesome to have that for like travel. Just throw that in the bag and you're covered. It doesn't matter what you're charging. You've got what you need. Go to nomadgoods.com/twig. You go there and use promo code TWIG. You're going to get 10% off your first purchase of any Nomad accessory. That's nomadgoods.com/twig. Make sure and use that promo code TWIG as well. That is a limited time offer to get that 10% off your first purchase of any Nomad accessory. And yeah, Nomad's great. Check it out for yourself. And we thank Nomad for their support of This Week in Google. All right. So we are at the picks section. And Stacey, let's start with you. What you got?
Okay, sorry. That was a big stretch. Let's see. Do I have something for today?
It's only the seventh inning, Stacey. You have two more to go.
You had something. It was a stretch.
I did have something. And now I'm like, what? What's it? Last week I showed you this thing. I'm confused because I reviewed this week. So, but I showed it to y'all last week.
Yeah. That thing's
not cool. That.
I like it.
As I look around frantically trying to figure out what arrived and what I'm doing.
It's okay to not have something too. I'll go ahead and say that.
It's fine. Never okay not to have a thing, especially because
you live in breathe
things.
It's
going to come to me later. Well, no, because I literally just got like new devices and I'm like, what did I haven't.
I can come back to you,
Stacey.
We can come back to you.
Okay. I'm gonna go walk around my desk and find the box that's on my desk. So I'm like,
say, you probably got a lot from IFA stuff, right?
You know, probably there wasn't a lot of great IFA. I could do No, I'm not gonna do that. That's cheating. All right.
Okay. Let's go to Jeff first and then we'll come back to you and we'll see what magic you've come up with. Jeff, what you got?
So this just in, the Wall Street Journal reports about the newspaper publishers that had tried to blackmail Google and Facebook into giving them money for no good reason, because Google and Facebook give them the links and give them the value. But they finally said, Okay, we'll pay you something, and we shut up and go away. So it reveals that Gannett was offered $6 million a year by Google. Here, free money, just take it and shush. They came back. Their counteroffer was $300 million a year. Now, I don't know about you, but the Gannett paper right by here in my town is crap. It's so thin you can shave with it. It's got nothing in it. It's just junk. $300 million a year is ridiculous. And this is where the industry is. Now, the Washington Post had discussed a possible deal for $5 million a year, and they rejected that. Then they got $15 from Facebook. But Facebook, you know what they said? When they said, enough with you guys. We're cutting this whole thing out. We're not giving any of you guys money because you're all a pain. That was my number.
How thin did you say it was?
It's so thin you could shave with it.
That was excellent. I heard that while I was looking. I realized my device is embargoed, so I can't show it to you. I have two devices and they're both embargoed until next week.
Don't.
Right. It's so secret. Sorry.
Just
a little
bunch here. Just the four.
But
of us.
I can't.
Give us a hint. What's it like?
I can give you it's a connected smart to thing. The internet. It's a connected device. Connected to the internet.
Whoa. That's new. Newsflash. But
I can offer you a book recommendation if
Great.
You would like that instead.
Love it.
This is an older book, but there's a new one, like the second book in this detective series, if it's not really a formal detective. It's called Suburban Dicks.
What?
As in Private Eyes. and it is hilarious. It is a reporter who is a total jerk, very good at his job, but a total jerk.
That's good.
And a heavily pregnant person who is like not an FBI profiler, but is very good at that sort of thing and didn't do that as her job because she got married and had like a lot of kids. And so it's there you go. It's good writing. It's fun. It's kind of late for their summer read, but I really recommend it. Like, and there's a new one coming, or there's a new one that just came out fairly recently, I think. So it looks like it might become an ongoing thing, but likable characters, the mystery itself is fun.
Will this be a Stacey's book club pick at some point, or is it not
no, because it's enough? Not science fiction.
Yeah.
Techie enough. Everything's real.
Not sci-fi.
And enough. It takes place in New Jersey. Yay. The Garden State.
The Garden State.
Very nice. So that is a book called Suburban Dicks by, Fabian Nicieza? Nicieza.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows? Just look.
I can't pronounce all the words I make up, so I clearly can't pronounce this unmade up word.
There you go. All right. Thank you for the book recommendation. Ant, what you got?
Well, this time, I got to say something about my family. But this is a book that was recommended to me by our very own Mr. Jerry there at Twit Studios. And I'm not quite finished with it, but I am really, really digging in this, called Masterminds and Wingmen. And I can't remember the other book that she wrote before, but this is, I love how this has given me perspectives as a parent of boys. Because I see things my way and I try to see things through other people's perspectives. But these are still my kids and I'm going to raise them the way I feel like raising them and do what I need to do. But it's still a very good read because you just get to see different perspectives and a lot of different insight as she interviews teenage boys and the whole process of them, you know, growing up with interesting parents, difficult parents, good parents, so on and so forth. But this is by Rosalind Wiseman. Yes, Rosalind Wiseman. Yeah. Masterminds and Wingmen.
Helping our boys cope with schoolyard power, locker room tests, girlfriends, and the new rules of boy world.
It's good stuff. Good
out
stuff.
In 2014. Nice. That sounds
And
like
of
really
course, antpruitt.com/prints.
Of course.
Hey, Jason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Since Benito let me sit in this chair and have this microphone, I thought I'd pick something.
Oh, I would love that.
We love it.
I haven't seen it. It's tonight. It's tonight's Nova. How writing changed the world. Sounds Whoa. Like the kind of thing. How creation of printing, the first information technology, drove empires and revolutions.
Should I talk to you about Gutenberg now?
I was going
to
say, you're speaking Jeff's language right now.
So watch Nova tonight, Jeff.
Whoa.
I know I will.
I love that. Thank you for offering that. That sounds really interesting. How writing changed the world, Nova A to Z. Check that out. So that is broadcast for the first time tonight. This is a new show.
Yep.
Right on. That sounds fascinating.
Will there be a rerun? Because I got stuff to do tonight.
Oh, you know PBS. It'll air on Friday. It'll air for the about once a month for the next 10 years.
Okay, perfect.
And if you call him up and tell him you enjoyed it, you get a free tote bag. No.
Oh, nice.
You got to tell him you enjoyed it and give the money for your free tote bag.
Also sweat.
There you go. That's how you get the tote
bag. I will admit that the only over-the-top service I pay for is PBS.
Oh, wow.
It's a good one.
Oh.
I mean, for 50 years, they kept bugging me to donate, and I never did. So now I am.
Now you are. Nice.
You're that kind of guy.
Yeah. Right on.
Well, you know, thanks to Leo and Lisa, I can afford to donate.
There it is.
There you go. That and Wikipedia.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, I do donate there.
Yeah. My pick of the week is a service that I used. So this is one of those AI art generation things, I feel like now... They're propping up everywhere, you know. Suddenly they're everywhere. But this was the first one that I had actually explored it, you know, after seeing like the results of like DALL-E and what was the one that was free? It was like DALL-E, it was like a limited
Stable Vision.
DALL-E Mini.
DALL-E Light.
Or DALL-E Light. It was something along those lines. And it was interesting, but it felt light. It felt like the images were kind of like low resolution, and it was like, okay, well, that's neat, but I want like full resolution. Like, I want to see what these things can do, get my hands on a kind of a higher end version of this, if that's a good descriptor for it. And came across one called Midjourney. And so...
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Should we tell you this was Leo's pick like 2 weeks? Yeah. Was that 2 weeks
ago?
Oh,
was it? Oh,
yeah.
See, you think I know that. You'd think I'd podcast, know that because, like, I legend having the lunch. Show.
But let's see.
Well, anyways.
The literal
so how about this? Leo told you about it, and I did a couple of images, so
yeah,
that's what I'll
see.
Show.
Yeah. See.
So one of them was, I labeled it alien art in the doc, and I can't remember what my cue was for it, but I put the links in there for you, John. And so the first one.
Oh, wow.
When we pull it up, have we showed it yet? No. Oh, sorry. Ooh. Sorry. No. Below the story, there's three links to a Google Drive. So there's one called Alien Art. Because Leo already did the pic, so I don't need to do all the setup and everything like this.
That's
there
pretty.
We go.
Ah!
So, isn't that interesting? I can't remember
that is pretty.
What the prompt was for this. I wish I had written them all down. But the way that Midjourney does this is really interesting. You put in the prompt. I think it's like imagine is the command prompt and then yes. all of the modifiers.
/ imagine, and then it gives you a blank.
And then it gives you four different ideas in like a little square grid. And you can either choose to take any one of those ideas and up-res it or take any one of those ideas and create four new ideas from that. Or you know, and you can go down that road. So I did that with a couple of images. That was one of them that when I got to the end, I was like, wow, that's
fascinating.
That looks like someone created that. That is so like intriguing. The second one I tried to recreate, Leo had done a podcast legend having lunch. Was that on this show?
Yeah,
that was on this show when I was out. And I was like, well, what would Midjourney do if I did that prompt? So that's the second link. And it's not nearly as impressive, although they, you know.
It's very similar, though, because the one in the upper left quadrant is really similar
old,
to what he.
Old white yeah. guy losing old some of his hair.
Old white guy with Brussels sprouts on a plate, you know, in the foreground. Yeah. The second one there is really the only one that alludes to anything podcast, because it kind of looks like that head on a platter is
headphones.
Wearing headphones.
Yeah.
But that's podcast legend having lunch. I didn't really explore that one much further than that. This last one I was really stoked on. I asked Micah to give me a prompt, and his prompt was
of course
Chihuahua playing Dungeons and Dragons, and I got
that
four options. This was the winner. And I'm telling you, like, I love this image. Like, that is just
that
so cool. It's a little, you know, it's a little, I mean, very abstract actually, but yeah, there's no
I have been trying each one of these services. My book is entitled The Gutenberg Parenthesis. So I want a cover from one of these things because I think it'd be really cool to have a book cover proposed to the publisher that came from AI, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't understand parentheses. It doesn't understand Gutenberg.
Maybe you're being too literal.
There's your sign, sir.
You would think putting something in a parenthesis. Yeah. I tried other things. Doesn't understand parentheses. And Gutenberg is too far back in history for it. Doesn't get it.
Do grammar snob printing press.
What was that?
Grammar snob printing press.
Grammar snob printing. Stacy needs a waffle.
Yeah, do moral panic.
Am I getting? No, I'm trying to think of things that like or Oxford comma or something to give it some. You know, maybe it's not parentheses. But
yeah,
maybe it'll get you something. I'm not being mean. I'm.
She's
truly
trying to
help
of
you.
The grammatical.
Yeah, the syntax or what it would require. I mean, one thing that I noticed with Midjourney in my short time, because you only get a limited number of free tries, right? You get 25 free tries. And then after that, it's $10 a month. You get 200 images for the month, or $30 a month and you get unlimited personal use. So I just did the 25 free tries. And what I learned in that short amount of time is the more descriptive words you can give, so like the better, the closer your image might actually, you know, come to representing something along the lines of what you're looking for. If I was giving it short prompts, I didn't get nearly as good results as if I really went out on a limb and was like, all right, here's a bunch of descriptors about what this would look like. So it takes a while to really learn the syntax of how these particular image generation systems work, you know. But someone prompted in the Discord, air conditioned garage full of squishmallows.
Excellent.
Okay, nice. Then. It looks too real. I don't even know
if
we have
I think
that.
I want to see Jason's mother, the car.
Parked in the air-conditioned garage. So anyways, Midjourney, check it out. It's the only reason I wanted to bring it up is because I feel like DALL-E 2, you know, all these other ones, I see people talking about them, but I have no way of using them. And then this one, it was like, oh, wait, through Discord? Okay. So I used it. And who knows? Maybe I got the suggestion from Leo when he featured this 2 weeks ago as his tool. I don't know.
But okay, it's okay. He's not here.
It's okay. Going to have to come down from this. All right. Well, we've reached the end of this episode of This Week in Google. It's been a lot of fun sitting in for Leo. He will be back next week to tell you all about the hair metal music that he is probably watching at this point. I think the concert started at 4, if I'm not mistaken. So he's in the thick of it already. I think Joan Jett was the opener. So Joan Jett might be playing right now, and he'll tell you all about it. But Jeff Jarvis, thank you so much for being with me on this episode.
Always a pleasure, sir. You do a great job.
Thank you. You want to leave everyone with anything? Anything you want people to know? Nah. Buzzmachine.com. I'll do it for you. At Jeff Jarvis on Twitter if you want to find him there. And Stacey Higginbotham, thank you so much. Always a pleasure doing a show with you. Appreciate it.
Just wait till next week. Great things.
Great things are afoot. Stacey on IoT.com. It's time for her waffles. So she will get those here in a matter of minutes. And thank you, Aunt Pruitt, sharer of the office just down the hall with me. What do you want to leave people with?
Just thanks for all the support. And make sure you guys go and vote in the Club Twit Book Club, because that's coming up here soon. That vote's closing here pretty soon. So if you're not a member of Club Twit, first go ahead and join. $7 a month.
There you go.
But we got 3 books. Well, actually, it's now down to 2 books because we figured out one hasn't been released yet.
I swear, when I looked it up, it was October 1st, so I don't know if it got pushed back or something.
But we had 3 books.
Clairvoyant Book Club. Who needs to read the book? We already know what we think.
Yeah.
I just said you could vote for the first version of it. So Wanderers.
Wanderers. We have A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, and we have Ancillary Justice. And right now, The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet is in the lead.
The cozy sci-fi space opera, which is not a form of, or which is not the title of a book.
Yes, now that I know.
Poor Ant. He's getting such an, he's like,
I was like, what?
An education.
I don't even want to know this much about sci-fi, you guys.
Jeez. Good grief.
Definitely everybody check that out at Club Twit if you're not already a member. twit.tv/Club Twit. Pretty awesome stuff what Ant is and everybody is doing over there. So make sure and check it out. We do this show, or Leo and you guys, anyways, do this show every Wednesday.
You're always there. We know you're here.
That's right. I'm behind the scenes. So you're right. I am a part of that. I'm behind the scenes putting the rundown together and making little notes down at the bottom of the rundown while you do your thing. But
frantically finding links when we go off topic.
Wait a minute. Where's this story? This one. Okay, yeah. Sometimes it's not even the story that Leo pulls up. It's just a story that has a similar headline.
Is close.
Like, whatever, that one.
Done that.
We do the show live every Wednesday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 2100 UTC. If you need any information about this show at all you need to do is go to twit.tv/twig. There you will find everything you need to know to subscribe to your podcatcher of choice. Jump out to YouTube, watch it there. You can even watch it or listen to the show in the page if that's your preference, but I highly recommend you subscribe. Then you don't have to work quite as hard for all the awesomeness that is This Week in Google. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye, everybody.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.